Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
We retired it. We retired it. That was the ending of the skit.
I can't stop doing it because I just like anytime something happens that I didn't expect was going to happen, I just do the Frank Underwood. Oh, you thought the expected thing was going to happen?
Oh, you thought Harrison Butker was going to hit that 55-yard field goal the third time in a row?
You'd be right.
You'd be completely correct.
You'd be right. But Meacham was there.
Meacham and his rather inviting mouth. I didn't even see. Did the Colts win today?
Yeah, they did. They beat the Vikings. The Vikings look awful. So condolences if you're a Vikings fan. I like having a exciting running back, Jonathan Taylor, looking great. Problem is running back's not going to build a franchise. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, man. And you know what? I'm not the best person to comment on the NFL, but it is nice. It's more fun watching the Colts this year than last year. And I like Jacoby Brissett, but like last year was more that like sense of dread. You're in that post Andrew Luck shock phase. Like, what are we going to do? And I think the answer is just kind of floating mediocrity for years until something happens.
Yeah, because they still had like a shit ton of cap or something, right? Like after I think last year, because they didn't really sign. I don't think much.
And I don't know what the cap. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan on. The thing is, like, I would get into it if we had a quarterback. This is you got to have your quarterback, right? Like you got to have a good quarterback. And Philip Rivers is a good Hall of Fame quarterback at the end of his career, and not the long term answer. It's just hard. Like, and that's where the Colts fans have been spoiled because we haven't really had that dilemma since 1998. so I don't know, but you know, it's the bare minimum. It's nice just to be able to watch football. Like, it feels like a luxury at this point, like having these games on. And I do like the piped in crowd noise. Like, I was watching the Chiefs. We were watching the Chiefs and Chargers. The end of SoFi. That together. Yeah, the SoFi, like the whole. Yeah, it looks nice in the same way that like an Apple store looks nice. I mean, they don't feel like stadiums anymore. They feel like monuments to.
It's almost like a theme park. I don't know how else to explain it. It's in a sense, like everything's super manicured.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Well, it's cool from a you know, gigantiveness standpoint, but the thing is like stadium design is really cool. You think about like all the, you know, there aren't many like legendary football stadiums. I think like all the legendary, well, okay, that aren't college, but even if you look at the college football stadiums, like, you know, those that have history and they've built onto them and expanded them and they're no longer recognizable in their current format because they hold 100,000 people now. But they still have like that old ass feel to them. And that like sucks if you're at the Rose Bowl and you're in the concourse, but it's like, there's something about being at the Rose Bowl, being out in the stands that feels like great. Like, you know, you don't have all those fucking like monstrosity boxes lording over you. You don't have flashing scoreboards and advertising. It's kind of a pure experience, but
there's like a level of like, I think grittiness to certain cities, I think, need to have a less high tech stadium. Like I wouldn't want SoFi. I don't think SoFi Stadium would exist in like Pittsburgh or something like that, or like even like in a Brown stadium. But like, I think in a huge market, even though like in LA, they don't give a fuck about football, in a big classy market like that, I think you need a classy looking stadium at least to try and draw people in, because again, they don't give a fuck about football.
Well, it's
unlike
Rust
Belt cities.
Yeah, it's kind of like what they do with like the U.S. Open golf courses, right? Like if you look at like the U.S. Open and PGA Championship courses, like they'll throw a new one in the mix every now and then, but like, you know, they'll keep coming back to the like Oakmonts and shit like that, like pretty regularly. And so you need those, like, you need those big tentpole stadiums to host events on a recurring basis. So like Los Angeles, like it's not only going to host the teams, but that'll be the site for like the Super Bowl probably every 4 to 5 years from here on out. It's because they've invested so much money into it. And that whole thing's going to be a complex. And I think the NFL Films has moved their headquarters there. So it's, you know, it's basically going to be the West Coast, if not already the West Coast operations for the NFL. I don't know that much about it, just from what I read about it. What's going on, man?
I ordered Ghost of Tsushima because I will be back in my apartment at some time soon. I looked at the fucking legendary edition for that game, and like it came with so much cool stuff. It came with like a battle flag. It came with like miniatures. It came with like all the cool shit that like I love from collector's editions from anything. But like it was $260 or something. And I was like, tough. I don't know if I like this game that much. I don't even play it yet.
That's like $260 is like should come with the PS4 money.
Exactly, yeah, collector's edition. I think when I bought, because I had the Xbox 360 I owned was the, like a, I think like the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 version. And then I think that was the same cost. It was decorated, came with the game, it came with two controllers, came with like all that shit. And this is literally just a game with a bunch of toys that I'm just going to like what decorate my room with.
Yeah, but you know, it's nice having knickknacks. The issue is like there's the different quality with like a lot of the limited edition stuff. I remember when Fallout 76?
76, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I mean, that had like a limited edition come out, and you know, they promoted this like twill tote bag, and this bag ended up being this polyurethane piece of shit. And it was just like insoled on top of the shit porridge that was already that game, and people got pretty mad about it. But then there are some like, I know like some of the Final Fantasies typically, like, you know, because that's a whole blitz of marketing, especially more in Japan. Yeah. I think the shit that comes with them is pretty nice.
Oh, we can talk about that. That's actually, I believe, our second news item. We can talk about that now. Just the PS5 titles that came out, or just that they demoed, which would be Final Fantasy, Spider-Man 2, and God of War Ragnarok. But you talk Final Fantasy because that's your thing, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy, it's weird because I love the older Final Fantasies more than the newer Final Fantasies, but I also admit, and I haven't played the online ones, by the way, but I admit that you couldn't do like a turn-based, like a typical turn-based real-time strategy game today. Like Persona 5 was like pretty good, but like I think people are expecting that more live combat system. And I think they like Final Fantasy 15 was good, and I think Final Fantasy 7 was okay, but they brought on the Devil May Cry guy. Like one of the leads on Devil May Cry to be the combat system designer for Final Fantasy 16. So I'm excited about that, and I like that they're going back to like a setting that's closer to Final Fantasy 9, and from what I hear, it's closer to like the setting in the online version. So I enjoy that. I think that would be good, but I want like more characters. That was the problem I had with Final Fantasy 15. I didn't like having the same party the whole game. It was suffocating. And then the whole story was just really stupid, I thought. The whole message was that, like, dudes rock. That was a game.
That kind of rules, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it rules, like, ironically, but, like, when you're playing a 30-hour, maybe one even 30-hour, like, 25-hour game, and the whole thing's, like, dudes rock. Like, I get it. Like, dudes can be friends, but, you know, it's, like, I don't know. It's just, like, in my face.
Yeah, and
what do you think about Spider-Man?
Too.
Like, so is Spider-Man? Is that the Miles Morales? Is that a full game or is that an expansion?
It's gonna be a full game on PS5. As far as at least that's what I understood from the trailer. Anyway, I feel like all I got out of this was the trailers because I was busy when they were releasing all of it, but I just watched them all and recap on YouTube. But it looked fucking awesome, and I think one of the things I liked about the Spider-Man game was just that it reminded me almost of Assassin's Creed in a sense, but it wasn't such like a contrived fucking weird plot like every Assassin's Creed has become. It's just like, you know, straightforward, it's Spider-Man shit. And they didn't try and give you origin story or any of that. Like, they're just like, here, you're in the middle of Spider-Man. Like, now just do it. You do it. Do it. You're the Spider-Man. The mechanics were cool and all that was just, I liked it.
They nailed the feeling of being Spider-Man. Like the feeling of swinging and then going up to a high building and then diving off the building and getting 10 feet from the ground and throwing a rope. And the Spider-Man just loves those ropes and swinging. And I think anything they added to that, like that's where I feel like they got away on the Assassin's Creed games is like the Odyssey. And I liked Origins a little more than Odyssey, but Odyssey felt like it was enjoyable, but I remember like the earlier Assassin's Creed games had more of that focus on like crowd stealth and actually assassinating people and being silent about it. And what Odyssey felt like, it felt like an action game with some elements of like
combat.
Yeah. Combat with some elements of stealth. And I get it. Like that, you know, game design has gotten to the point where like, that's probably what they need to go with in order to be competitive and just having a big world and giving people everything they need to do in the game. But that's why like something like Spider-Man, where if you look at the map between Odyssey, it's like obviously much smaller, but they made the actual travel and world denser, which I think is probably better for game design. So I'm excited for Miles Morales. I don't think I'll get a PS5 at launch just because I didn't pre-order last week. Because I feel like even people who pre-ordered said they might not get it on release day. I do think they're going to be shortages with the PS5. Because of you know, so many people are, you know, like one is PS5, new PlayStation hasn't come out in years, but more people are inside spending time inside or working from home or might otherwise have not had as much time playing video games as they do now. And so it's probably be hard to get. I've resigned myself to not getting it.
I pre-ordered it on Amazon and like shout out to Fat Kid Deals. They put up the tweet when they said like, yeah, we're in stock, come buy it now. So I pre-ordered it mostly because they don't charge you until it's shipped, which thank God. But I, what do you call it? Then I get a message like a week later and they're like, yeah, just so you know, if there's a shortage, you're just not getting one. Sorry. Like, I didn't know you could even do that. Like if I pre-ordered, I thought I had a slot. Essentially I was in queue for it.
No, man. That's And then that's the thing is I don't know if I could have taken that, like the feeling of getting through on a pre-order and getting a note saying, oh, maybe not. And by the way, you don't know when your PS5 is coming. So I'm sure I'll regret it not having a place in line when like push comes to shove and it's November and everybody's posting pictures of Spider-Man posting pictures. What is this, 2001? They're playing on Twitch. I'm not going to join because I don't want to spoil it. You know what though? You know what I'm a truther of? I'm a truther on this Rock gate thing.
Yeah, that's the next thing, the Rock destroying his gate.
Yeah, can you explain it like in case anybody hadn't seen it?
Yeah, so if you don't follow the Rock on Instagram, which like I think if you join Instagram, that's like almost the Tom Anderson of Instagram. Yeah. Like they make you follow him. Like you, if you don't follow him, you purposely unfollowed him. But he posted just a picture of a destroyed front gate to a nice house saying, not my finest hour, but a man's got to work. We experienced a power outage due to severe storms causing our front gate to not open. Yada, yada, yada. I had to go to a movie, movie shoot for, I believe it was Red, the one he's doing with Ryan Reynolds and a couple other people. And I pushed, I pulled, and I ripped the gate completely off myself, tore it out of the brick wall, severed the steel hydraulics, and threw it on the grass. My security team was able to meet the gate condition and welders an hour later, and they were apparently in disbelief and equally scared. Not my finest hour, but I got to go to work. And it's for Black Adam. And I think I'm 100 ready to be Black Adam, #RipGates. So rip it to Bill Gates. He died in the process of this gate being destroyed.
Just
never knew you.
I don't know. I don't want to doubt The Rock. I like The Rock, but I do feel like ever since I started becoming a truther on his cheat meal thing, where he obviously doesn't eat the meals he's cheating with. Sample size, that one video where he pushed the pancakes aside or whatever. I don't know what happened to this gate, but he could have ran into it with his car.
That's what I thought.
It could have gotten blown off with the wind. Like, it just seems like you're The Rock. Like, I know you got to go to work, but people are going to wait for you. Like, you know, like,
you are Black Adam. They can't shoot the movie without Black Adam.
Yeah, you're the biggest star in the world, and I'm sure people would understand, you know, if there was a 15-minute delay. And so, you know, it probably did happen. It's more fun to speculate that it didn't. I think that there should be security footage of this if it's at his front gate. I'd like to see that.
There's a camera in the shot. There's a camera literally in the shot of the picture he put up.
So he should release the footage. If he really tore down the gate, I want to see the footage. Don't just release the actual gate itself. Like, it would have been better with the footage. I want to see that. That's why, like, those two things coming together, I feel like maybe the weather did it, or maybe somebody backed their car into it. And, you know, he just kind of seized on it to do a little brand building. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I 100% believe that The Rock could rip open that gate. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of disbelieving The Rock could tear apart that gate. I think he could. I just don't know until I see that video if that actually happened.
It doesn't make sense to me for a number of reasons. Number one, I don't know why he would risk hurting himself tearing down this gate just to be at a shoot on time when, like, again, him not being hurt is like the driver for Mickey being the most high paid star in the world for the last like 3 years straight. Number two, like, if the whole point is he needs to get out of his property so that he can drive to work. And why would he not just drive his car through this if that was the big problem? He has a giant fucking indestructible truck that anyone would fix for free. I'm sure he would do that. And also, I think that in this picture alone, because in the back of the picture, you see three green trash bags. I think this proved your cheat meal thesis, because those are, I'm pretty sure, compost trash bags. Like, there's three, you could see them if you pick on the picture. There's three compost garbage bags in the background on his street, like, being put out. That's the cheat meal.
Just dumping all his cheat meals into the compost garbage bags?
Take a look at the picture.
Bunch of flies and maggots and just feeding back to the earth via some waffles.
Exactly. He's giving all of those, like, rich, nice proteins from the sushi right back to the earth, putting them into the green giant garbage bags, which they're only for food. I've never seen, like, blue is for recyclables, in most places. I don't know if that's true. It's probably not. But I'm looking at it, and I think that we just proved your first stay woke theory.
I don't know. I definitely believe he doesn't eat the cheat meals, because I think
there's no way.
Look, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that keeps you coming back to the gate. If he's dedicated enough to not eat the cheat meals, then maybe he didn't tear. Maybe he did tear down the gate. So maybe like one of the theories has to be false for the other to be true. Because I know he has dedication. I think he's probably telling the truth. It's just more fun. It's not normal to tear off a gate, right? Like, that's just not. That's what I'm trying to get at. Is like, that's just not behavior that I understand. Because I couldn't afford to repair a gate, and two, I couldn't physically tear down a gate myself. So it's just hard for me to relate to that story.
He said he pressed through the hydraulics. Like, this is The Rock's house. You're telling me his security isn't good enough that a person can just push through the gate? Not even just a car. It's a human being.
I don't know, man. That was a nice wall, though. I did like the brickwork on that wall.
Mm-hmm. That was a very nice wall. The next thing is they did a table read of Fast Times, Ridgemont High. And it had the original cast plus a bunch of other people. It had Brad Pitt. It had Jennifer Aniston, Matthew McConaughey, a bunch of just like a giant cast. Shia LaBeouf was in it. Morgan Freeman, a bunch of people. But everyone was just talking about it, so I felt like I should add it. I don't watch any of these. And they've done, I feel like, a bunch of these things. I just don't really care for them.
Yeah, Shia, I think, got some pub because he was doing it from a car and smoking at the same time.
Yeah.
He was doing the Spicoli read, and he just was, you know, he was doing a Shia LaBeouf thing, which it's like sometimes you don't know if he's doing a bit or if that's just him. And I think that's a bit in and of itself.
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's very on brand for Shia LaBeouf. I think it's one of those things at first it's kind of annoying, but like when you do it long enough, it gets to the point where that's just like an accepted part of that person's personality. And like, you're like, okay, I think that's kind of neat. He's consistent. Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't watch this. I'm not like a huge Fast Times guy. Like I think Fast Times, like when I think of Fast Times, like I think of the person who would like this table read the most, it would have to be Bill Simmons. I feel like Bill Simmons is the exact
rewatch most it's had a whole episode for this, I'm sure.
Because he's the right age where, you know, that Phoebe Cates scene would have like the right amount of impact on him. And like that
look at those knockers. Isn't that crazy? That shit's great. Oh my God. That's like those two, they remind me of, you remember when Larry Bird, he won the 3-point contest? Just like that.
Yeah, but that's what I feel like gets excited for these table reads. And then the other one that they did that I thought was kind of cool, even though I had no interest in it, was there's this big thing around the Princess Bride. And I don't think it was necessarily a table read as much as it was just like an intentionally poorly done reconstruction of the movie with lots of different celebrities. And I think that's kind of neat that, you know, they can coordinate and everybody can get together and it's some form of entertainment for those who want to see it. But I don't know if there's like, I'm trying to think of a movie that would get me interested to see a table read. Like it would have to have, it would have to be like, honestly, it'd have to be like Little Giants or something with Rick Moranis. And I know there was a commercial with him and he kind of returned via that commercial with Ryan Reynolds, but it had to be something with Rick Moranis, like somebody who's gone away for a while and you haven't seen from, and you just like want to hear their voice again. Like that would be the thing that get me into one of these table reads. Other than that, like, you know, what would be cool is if they did a table read with the people that were supposed to get the role. Like if they did the Matrix with Will Smith,
that would be amazing. Actually.
Yeah. I think that'd be kind of cool. Cause then you know, you get their thoughts on like missing out on the role itself. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's entertainment for those who like want to get it, but I think the actual headlines of them themselves is kind of more the Shia LaBeouf territory of him just being wacky on camera.
Maybe not even missed out on roles, but people that auditioned for roles but didn't get them.
Oh, that'd be
because
neat.
There's like a ton of those too. Like very good actors and actresses that just didn't have the reputation at the time and didn't get certain roles, but that would actually be awesome. That's a good idea. The next thing, the Boss Baby.
We should call all our celebrity friends, get that put together.
We could easily do that.
Text PFT and Big Cat and have them reach out to Anna Kendrick and Zac Efron. Just like, let's get that going.
Yeah, get the ball rolling. And then we could be the guys that said, like, we put all this together. Like, we'll do the, what's the intern Troy thing that I did at the end of the burger thing, which would be like a product of Trill and Ken Jack at the end of it. Just right in your fucking face.
It would just give us an executive producer credit.
Yes, exactly. The next thing up is the Boss Baby cast, Jeff Goldblum, James Marsden, and Amy Sedaris. The plot for this, I didn't read it. Apparently it's been out for a while, the plot anyway. And it's kind of insane. So if you remember the first one, it's essentially just about the Boss Baby and his older brother. And this, Tim and his Boss Baby little bro Ted have become adults and have drifted away from each other. Tim is now a married dad. Ted is a hedge fund CEO, but a new Boss Baby with a cutting edge approach and a can-do attitude is going to bring them together again and inspire a new family business. And
is it's one all of them going to have a Boss Baby?
Tim has the new Boss Baby, which is voiced by Amy Sedaris.
And so Tim is the idiot one, or is he the Boss Baby?
Tim is the brother.
And, brother of the Boss Baby.
Yeah, and Ted is the Boss Baby.
Still going to be voiced by Alec Baldwin, I guess.
Yeah. That's still going to be Alec Baldwin, and then I think the new cast is Marsden, who's taking over for Tobey Maguire, and I think that's it. And then I think the other two were, I want to say, who's the Jimmy Kimmel? No. Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel's coming back for it. The other Jimmy. There's too many fucking Jimmys. Shitty name too. No offense to the Jimmys.
Jimmy?
I don't like it.
I like
my
Jimmy.
My little brother, his name is James, and he went by Jimmy for a little bit, and it didn't work.
You got to have the right last name with Jimmy.
Yeah,
like it's true. If your name's Jimmy O something, like perfect Jimmy name.
Yeah, or like even most Irish stuff or even English names, I think kind of like Jimmy Smith. There's a Jimmy Smith. I think that's like a athlete of some sort, right?
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, it's the Boss Baby. It's Oscar. The first one, Oscar nominated for best animated feature. Hans Zimmer was on the track on the first one, and he's coming back for this new one.
Hans Zimmer on the track, ho. That's his tag.
Yeah, exactly.
Boss Baby was something that it was, for some reason, it was ridiculous in concept when it came out. Because it just felt like, it felt like the bottom of the barrel in terms of these animated movies, because it's just like, okay, we know what you people like. It's fucking babies and pets, and all these animated movies are going to be about animals and Secret Life of Pets and babies and continue this cycle on and on and on. But I think the actual Boss Baby movie was quite enjoyable.
I agree.
Alec Baldwin, I thought, was like, you know, he basically just did his whole
Jack Lemmon or whatever.
Jack.
Not Jack Lemmon. That's the actor. That's the actor from Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, but he Jack, did he did his 30 Rock character.
Yeah, but what's Jack? What? Someone's screaming at their fucking car right now. 30 Rock, Jack, Donahue.
Yeah. He did that in baby form. Boss Baby, cute little Boss Baby.
It's cute. I mean, you got him. I like Tobey Maguire's voice too in that movie. I think that's one of those movies like we shit on it because, you know, it's the Boss Baby. It's funny, but at the same time, like when you actually watch the movie, it's like a decent blend of like adult and family humor. You know what I mean? Not like adult humor, but like little jokes that clearly kids won't get, but adults will. And I think I appreciate that sort of thing. And
the Control Alt Delete strip. Was the Lost Baby.
Yeah. It was so stupid.
The Lost is one of the funniest things of all time. Well, they're doing something different, which I think they must have watched the animated series, because the animated series sucks. And it's just because they're just doing the Boss Baby thing. And every episode is him just being the Boss Baby, and we got a new corporate-ish type problem to solve, or solve it with my like Boss Baby approach. Mm-hmm. So you know, this conceit maybe allows for a you know what it's going to do. It's going to be a little reflection on the characters and how they've drifted apart.
It's going to feel good. It's family. It's Boss Baby. What is it? The Family Business or something? I think that's the title of the new one.
Yeah.
Boss Baby, the Family Business, the Family Affair. Jeff Goldblum's going to play like a scientist of some sort that's involved with the new Boss Baby.
Do you get kicked out? Like, do they fire you? Do they give you a golden parachute from the Boss Baby company when you age out of the company? Or do you have to retire from being a Boss Baby?
So before I read these plot details, I would assume that they would like Men in Black memory wipe you or something when you retired, kind of like in Men in Black, literally. But I just thought that would be the go-to thing, because no one else can know about Boss Baby Corporation.
Well, it seems like if you grew up knowing about the you know, details of the Boss Baby Corporation, you kind of maybe look for seams at the rest of life and think that there's other, you know, industries behind things, like you know, like what are other natural phenomenons, like tornadoes? Like tornadoes, is there like an entire company of weather babies? Mm-hmm. I don't know why that to be babies.
Well, it's a Boss Baby.
Boss Baby, boss, well, Boss Baby.
If the Boss Baby's behind that stuff, they're also behind bad companies too. Like, they're behind Enron. They're behind British Petroleum.
Baby Enron.
The Enron baby was the worst baby for sure.
That's that was their defense in court. It was like, goo goo gaga, Your Honor. We're just babies. We didn't know we were misstating our assets and balance sheet. Okay. Boss Baby. Yeah.
That's a Boss Baby. The last thing, The Croods 2 is releasing a month early, and they released a brand new poster. It's The Croods 2. What the fuck is the name of it again? More Croods?
Was it More Croods?
I just lost my link of the picture, but it was...
Well, because they changed it from Croods 2 to Croods something.
Yeah, right? It's The Croods 2. Croods.
A New Age.
The Croods, a New Age, and they're bumping it. This is the first time, I think, in the last year, we're talking about a studio bumping forward a movie, like, because they I think they're originally scheduled for December, and now they're going to release it in November, a month early
in the theaters.
It's crazy.
Oh yeah, theatrically released right in time for Thanksgiving.
Exactly, because who doesn't think about, you know, the Croods around Thanksgiving time? You know, you're eating your Nana's cream pie and you're just like, whoa, this... no, I mean, like, come on.
I know, but just that. I just didn't like the way that sounded.
you're eating your grandma's, you know, famous nut pie, and then you're like, okay, I'm thinking about Nick Cage as the Crude, as Gru Crude or whatever his, no, Greg Crude, right? What was his name? Grug?
Grug. It's Grug. Because it's like Grug, Greg, Crude, but a caveman version of Greg.
Exactly, yeah, which is perfect name for, I think, an average everyday caveman. But this is huge news for us, I think, in the podcast in general. The first movie being bumped up is Our Good Boys, The Croods 2.
I don't really, like, despite me talking about The Croods a lot, I think I prefer, I you know, The Croods are fine. I prefer Boss Baby blast to The Croods.
You do? Oh, I didn't expect
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know, The Croods is just, there's something about The Croods that just feels weird, feels off.
It's The Croods, it's DreamWorks, just like what do you call it? Boss Baby.
Boss
exactly.
Baby, DreamWorks.
Yeah, they're same, the same thing, except one's cavemen.
I mean, they're probably equal. I don't know what it is about The Croods. It's just kind of like, I think part of it is just getting Nick Cage in there and just being like, okay, dude, just do your thing. It's like, well, you don't have any direction for me? It's like, no, just read these lines as if like you're you reading lines as a caveman.
I feel like he's not necessarily a caveman actor. Like Patrick Warburton is a guy I would cast as a caveman voice. Or like,
was he not in The Croods?
What? Oh, he should have been in The Croods.
He should have been in The Croods. Yeah, Patrick Warburton's got a big time Croods voice. I don't think he's in The Croods too.
Let me see. Croods cast. I think. Okay, so it had Emma Stone, Nick Cage, Ryan Reynolds, Catherine Keener, Clark Duke. Clark Duke does have a great caveman voice. Cloris Leachman, Randy Tom.
Dude,
and
Cloris Leachman's still killing it.
It's crazy. She's so
95. She has to be 94.
That's yeah. 94. That's insane. And I remember, I think the first movie I saw her in was like probably like Bride of Frankenstein or something. But the first time I'm like, oh, that's Cloris Leachman was Beer Fest. And she was so old in that. Now she's just older. It's insane.
Still doing it. I mean, she was very, I mean, she's been like, for being 94, she has been very active. If you look at her yeah. filmography, I mean, I think that's kick ass.
I think Clancy Brown would be a good Croods voice. The guy, he is like every anime dub voice ever, but he does Mr. Krabs. I think most people recognize him as, who's the guy that does Bender and also a bunch of the animes we're about to talk about, the dub voice to John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio, yeah.
Yeah, he would be really good as a Croods voice. I don't know. I can't think of many actress voices that would be good for Croods. Because when I think of caveman voices, I think just like so deep. So
the way they do it on the animated Croods show is like all the Croods family talks normally. But okay. then all everybody around him talks like a caveman, which kind of gives you the except like Ryan Reynolds' character, because Ryan Reynolds' character was like what, Homo erectus rather than, you know, yeah. the Croods are Neanderthals, and he was, you know, I think Emma Stone was cast in that just because her name's Stone. They're trying to do a thing.
Oh man, I didn't really think about that, but that is probably the case.
I don't know.
Wait, did they get? Yeah, they. I forgot. Croods got nominated for an Academy Award as well, just like Boss Baby. Although the music was from Alan Silvestri, who did what do you call it? You'll know from, I think, Back to the Future and Avengers stuff, a whole Marvel crap. So that's kind of like a duel of fates right there. The Boss Baby got Hans Zimmer, and they got Alan Silvestri.
It's got Clark Duke, like you said. You remember when they brought him onto The Office with the other dude, and like they're two of the worst characters that have ever been on television,
mm-hmm.
and somebody somewhere was like, these guys are going to breathe new life into the show for sure.
I don't know what he, like, what was he in? Like, Hot Tub Time Machine, I think, is a big thing, right?
Yeah.
Coolest name ever. But then you look at his face and you're like, you're not a running back from wherever. No. You're not a fucking hockey player. You're not anything cool. You're not a boxer. Like,
he's got a vibe. He's got his own vibe. But it's not like,
I agree.
Clark Duke, you think of like tight ends for the, tight end for like the 49ers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And then I look at his face, I'm like, you're not, no, your name's like Seth or something.
Yeah. Or he could be a Jimmy. Like he could be
a Jimmy
Duke.
That would be totally fine with me. But anyway, that's the Croods. We're going to get into,
way to bring that one home. That's the Christmas Croods talk 2020.
Look, when you talk about the Croods, you got to give them
send,
the sign up.
Send Croods. You've done Send Croods before, right?
No, did we?
No, I don't know, but it wouldn't be if you're like Send Croods and you just get a picture of the Croods and you're like, oh, yeah, that's daddy likey.
Wait, I'll send that way. But what should be the thing? What should be the tweet? Hey, my parents aren't home. Send crudes. Can you go into the bathroom and send me some crudes, please? How about that? Should I tweet that from LCB?
Take a picture. No, don't tweet it.
No, I want to tweet from LCB. I want to tweet like send crudes.
Well, why don't you do like a fake conversation? It just says send crudes, and the other person just sends a picture of the crudes back, and it's just a screenshot of that.
Oh, it's gonna take too much time. I'll go back and do it after.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
Okay, so I forgot we're supposed to do that thing where like you say what you're gonna do in the rest of the podcast at the beginning. But so this is what we're gonna do. We already did the news. We're gonna do Princess Mononoke review because this is Miyazaki Monday because you're listening to this on Monday. We're gonna do our top five Studio G movies. We're gonna do our top five animes, and then we have a draft with Coley, Nick, and KB for our most disappointing children coming up soon. But first, we have a word from our sponsor, Mack Weldon. The new normal uniform has a lot of us searching our closets and drawers for men's essentials that aren't there. So instead of the usual business casual button-ups and jeans, it's soft-knit polos, tees, joggers, and active shorts. But
shorts with suspenders. Like flea exactly. Shorts with suspenders.
Exactly like flea. Yeah. The bassist from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I'm dressing like the bassist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Mack Weldon, help me.
Exactly. So, but whatever.
I just wear a sock on my penis.
That you walk around day to day with a sock on your penis. Instead of doing that, whatever men's basics you need, Mack Weldon has you covered with unmatched comfort and fit. I mean, they send us stuff for ahead of the ads, and like I legitimately only want to wear my Mack Weldon underwear because they're incredibly comfortable. Like not even just when I'm like podcasting, blogging, whatever, sitting down, I don't get like swamp ass or anything, which I do with my shitty Hanes. And what do you call it? When I'm like running or walking or exercising, they still feel really good. And they're like loose, which I, but they're not like loose, but they're airy. I feel like you get good circulation out of them, which is rare and underwear.
But,
and their shirts feel great. And they have socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, active shorts. And they promises comfort and a consistent fit. Look good, feel great from working out, going out to going to work on a date. Mack Weldon is for everyday life. They have silver, they have air knits, they have dry knit, they have warm knit. And now they have Weldon Blue, which is a totally free loyalty program. Level one gets you free shipping for life, which is crazy. And then level two, you can get to with $200. You get 20% every order for the rest of the next year, which is an insane bargain when you kind of think about it. And they like you to be comfortable. And if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. So for 20% off your first order, go to mackweldon.com/lights and use promo code LIGHTS.
I'm going to keep this thing I don't like.
Yeah. Why
but
not?
They'll give you your money back. No, why not? Just have a pair of underwear you don't like. I mean, you're going to like them. But
you
like,
can use it for anything else you want.
If you're that person who just like is just not happy with anything and you're like, oh, I hate this underwear. I'm going to keep it though.
Yeah. They'll send you money. That's very rare, I think, in the consumer bit or in the clothing business. And that's mackweldon.com/lights, promo code LIGHTS for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. All right, let's talk about Princess Mononoke. Princess Mononoke, I have Jeff's rating, so we'll do Jeff's rating. We'll do the audience rating as well. But you and me, we talk a lot, I think, about anime. Yes. Jeff has seen, I think, his fair share of anime movies. But I think for you, I remember at some point in the podcast, like I'd seen a couple Studio Ghibli movies before, Ghibli, whatever you want. I've seen it pronounced 10 different times in 10 different ways.
I've also said Ghibli, but I think you said Ghibli. I don't know what the
I'm gonna say Studio G.
Is. Yeah, Studio G.
Studio G. So, but like I've seen Studio G movies before. Like for me, it had been Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro, and I'd seen a bunch of times before. I'd never seen Princess Mononoke until you recommended it because you said it was one of your favorite animated movies ever.
Yeah.
You said it was amazing. And I remember once it hit, I think it came to a streaming platform, not HBO Max, this is before that. It came somewhere and I rented it and I did not regret it all because it is honestly, I still think one of my favorite animated movies I've ever seen. And I think we did like a ranking, right, of our favorite animated movies. And I think I had it lower in my top 10. You might've had it as your number one. I'm not sure.
I think right? Spirited Away was my one. It was either that or Mononoke. I can't remember. It's up there. I mean, it's up there.
Yeah, exactly. So Princess Mononoke, I'll do a little summation of it. Let's go pull up the Wikipedia machine. So Princess Mononoke, I mean, I'm not going to fucking read off like my own synopsis of it. I'm going to give you what they said. It's a 1990s.
It's weird because Mononoke was released in 97 in Japan, mm-hmm. and it took like almost 2 years to get to the United States, mm-hmm. which like was kind of like, in terms of like the Japanese entertainment to United States pipeline at the time, was like pretty common because of the translation. But you know, the entertainment industry has grown to such a point where, you know, you're going to see stuff like coming out of Japan. You have seen stuff coming out of Japan released same day, completely translated. So that was one of the things that threw me off. It was like, oh, it was 2 years. And it was just different back then. Cause I remember like video games would be like a whole year before they got translated and came out.
Cause there's a lot of, like, I think, especially when you're going from like a non-Latin language, there's a lot of like nuance with that stuff. Like certain words and idioms and stuff just don't make sense in English compared to, you know, Japanese or whatever other language you might be translating from. And that's obviously really important.
Yeah. You know, and I think Mononoke especially is like a lot of the Miyazaki movies that, I guess like the concept of spirituality in this movie and like the spirituality.
Mysticism. Yeah.
Mysticism and connected to nature. I don't think, you know, like there's a disconnect between, I think, Western sensibilities and you know, those sort of, you know, Western sensibilities on nature versus those coming from other cultures and countries.
Yeah. So like, even like a good example of that, the term even is in the Wikipedia, the Mononoke is not a name. It's a Japanese word for supernatural shape-shifting beings that possess people and cause suffering, disease, or death. Like that's not something we would pick up on, obviously, since we don't know Japanese. But just to give you any of us as a synopsis, if you don't know the movie, it's set in the late Muromachi period of Japan, approximately 336 to 573, and includes fantasy elements. The story follows a young Amishi prince named Ashitaka and his involvement in a struggle between the gods of a forest and the humans who consume its resources. And you and me, I think I've seen it at least like probably 3-4 times now or something like that. And I'm sure you've probably seen it even more than that, right?
Probably 6. I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this movie, what I like a lot about it, I think is kind of stemmed in a few different directions. I really like the spirituality side of this, like you said, like the mysticism of it, where they tie it in a way that I think is easier to digest as a Western audience member, where like for us, I feel like that's not something we usually enjoy too much, right? Like most of our like whatever animated movies aren't going to touch on some shit like that. This did, and it also touches on morality, I think, in a very I would say it shows morality in a way that's not so like black and white, which is something you always mention whenever we talk about Mononoke. And I think that beyond that, also just animated gorgeously. Gorgeously animated, especially when you think like this is made in 97. It looks like it could be made like fucking 2 years ago. It's amazing. The soundtrack is beautiful too. Like it just accompanies everything amazing, like just perfectly. But yeah, you take it down first.
Well, yeah, I mean, so one is so I mean I give it a 95. It's almost a perfect movie for me. I think I have some issues with like the ending. In terms of, and we can get to that, but this movie like is pretty explicitly an environmental message. It was designed as such and comes across as such. Like I think, you know, you don't have to be very smart to pick up on the fact that like, you know, what Irontown represents is kind of like, I guess a threat to nature, and the spirituality I think serves as basically serves as just a characterization of like a living environment and living nature. And what you're saying about the morality is that you think it's like, when I talk about something like Captain Planet, right? Which is one of the first pieces of pop culture that, you know, like in America I was exposed to that, you know, posed an environmental message. And, you know, it's a good message, but the way Captain Planet presents it is, in a way such that like the bad guys are like disgusting pigs and like pollute and whatever. And it's like very noble and virtuous to protect the environment. And Mononoke presents it in a way in that the environmental destruction is a bad thing. Yet the reasons that Lady Eboshi does it are the reasons that she is kind of at war with, you know, the forest around her is because she's caring for her people. And that in and of itself is like a different take. And I think something that like American audiences aren't used to, in the fact that like, while there is like a clear bad guy, it's not really like a villain. It's just, it's an antagonist in the way that it, you know, provides I think a worse person than, you know, Ashitaka to go off of. But I also think Oboshi at the same time was very noble in terms of like how she was trying to look out for humanity, but it was just looking out for humanity at the detriment of all other living creatures outside of it, which is very relevant, obviously, to current day, because we, you know, we share this earth with things that, you know, outnumber us pretty greatly in terms of other beings. And I think, you know, a lot of times it's a very pigheaded sentiment of humans that we think that we have rights to the earth just because we are the most advanced beings on it, which like we are, but that doesn't necessarily, just because we can, you know, make TVs, I don't think that necessarily makes it right morally and ethically. But to wrap it all up in terms of the thought, the way the movie presents it is more nuanced in that terms of like an environmental message, saying that like the environment's being polluted currently, but you know, a lot of it is because, you know, people may not be intentionally trying to do so. They may be doing it because they have no other option to do. You know, you think about like, maybe I need to take a car to work because my work is an hour away. And that might not be the most environmentally sound way to do it, but like I have no other option because I got to feed my family. And that's pretty small on the scale of things. But I think the general message of this movie is that like, you know, there, you can't be doing things in the name of like taking care of yourself and taking care of others around you that are like, you know, not necessarily taking care of the world as a whole.
Yeah. I think the way they present this, and I'm not smart enough to dissect like the chaotic neutral and all shit like that, but I think that they present all of them like on a spectrum, sort of. I would say like the boars despise humans for everything they do to nature in their homes. I would say that San despises humans for everything that they see that humans do to their homes. And then Ashitaka is like more on their side, but a little more pragmatic, because like humanity needs to live too. And I think he is cognizant of the fact more so that like just because nature exists does not mean that it's like untouchable. And then I think that Lady Eboshi is on like the, I would say a little bit further to the right of that, where she thinks like we deserve part of this land. We are part of nature. We're humanity. And then you go further over to the right and you get someone like, who is the hunter character? Kobayashi, right?
Oh, the monk?
Yeah, the hunter monk, right?
Oh, Jigo?
Jigo. Okay, sorry. I was looking at the sheet. It was Kobayashi was the voice actor of Jigo in that. So that like that character's further right, where he's like, humanity deserves whatever the hell they want, and like that's just the end of that story. So I think that they present like morality across that spectrum, and it's like it's not necessarily here's bad guys, here's good guys. It's like there's a variety of different viewpoints of how you can look at this and like in different ways you can interpret it. Like, obviously I think that I agree with you. The overall message of it is what we do to our environment comes back to roost, and that isn't necessarily in the form of a fucking giant deer monster or whatever. It's going to be in the form of global warming. Could be in the form of whatever else. It's more symbolic than that. But I think he's very Miyazaki that is very clear in that. And I think the way he's able to incorporate a lot of Japanese mysticism, like stuff like the spirits in the forest and all that, like things like that, that normally I would look at face value and be like, what the fuck is that? I don't understand this. This isn't something I'm like, you know, we don't really syntax shit like that. Like we grow up in a very different type of culture, but like, I think he's able to put all that shit out there in a way that it's very easy for us to understand it and kind of put the pieces together on that. So I really enjoy that. And I think, what do you call it? The voice acting performances on both sides of this movie, both the dub and the sub, were really good, because I first watched this as the dub version, which has, you know, Billy Crudup, Claire Danes, I think it was Minnie Driver who does Lady Eboshi.
Billy Bob Thornton, Jigo,
John DiMaggio, all those guys, they're great. Like, it's great on both sides. Very few, I think, not even just Studio G movies, but animated movies with dubs in general don't get that right.
No, they did it. I mean, part of the release is like this was kind of a big deal. This came out and actually came to theaters. And when it did come to theaters, it wasn't like a wide release. I don't remember. I had to go to some art house theater in Indianapolis by Castleton Mall to go see it. And so it like wasn't a huge thing, but it was a big deal that this critically acclaimed movie was getting released in America. So just for those who, you know, I think we talked about our dissection of the plot, like if you haven't seen it, so like Ken Jack mentioned, like Ashitaka basically gets cursed with a fight from a boar who had been shot with an iron bullet. And the curse is one of those that moves slowly down his body, so he's being killed by this curse, and he kind of goes on this quest. He gets exiled by his village, and I thought his whole the whole Mishi clan was one of the more mm-hmm. interesting parts of the movie, because you know that I think is symbolic of I guess humans, you know, that's the closest to humans being in harmony with nature.
Yeah.
In this movie, like they kind of like Ashitaka is kind of a neutral character to all of this, because, you know, while he is like trying to, you know, kind of get more answers around like what's going on with them, is there's any way to break the curse or I guess like stop. Was it really like breaking the curse? It was more so just stop the animals from being cursed and destroying everything around them. Well, this quest takes him. He meets Jigo. He, you know, encounters the Kadamas, which are very cute, in the spirit forest. Mm-hmm. Meets Lady Eboshi. Lady Eboshi has lepers that she takes care of. And this is kind of where it characterizes Lady Eboshi is, you know, basically clear-cutting the forest around her to mine the iron. And then, meanwhile, there's San, who is the titular Princess Mononoke, who... essentially raised by wolves, and the wolves are talking spirit gods intent on killing Eboshi and eating Eboshi so she'll stop the destruction that happens around them. The whole movie culminates basically in Jigo getting involved, who is the monk we met before, and trying to claim the head of the spirit god of the forest, I think, which materialized itself, and it was a deer, right?
It was like a deer, like, with like a human's face.
Yeah, deer in a human's face. Anyway, the whole thing kind of like wraps up nicely, I thought, which I didn't love. Like Ashitaka, I his curse was lifted, but I thought the movie kind of set it up so he kind of knew he was going to die, and it prepared me for his death. And every time I watch it, I forget that he doesn't die. And so I'm set for him to die. Mm-hmm. And I almost think it would have been more profound, like maybe a little bit too on the nose, but I don't know which way is the more American way to look at it. Like having the happy ending where he lives, or having the ending where he dies. So his death like kind of means something. Yeah. But he does go back, and this is like kind of where things come together with saying like Eboshi's the villain, or she's the antagonist in the sense that, you know, she needs to change her ways. And she does, and he helps to rebuild Iron Town, and everything kind of wraps up with the forest beginning to regrow. So it's a clear end. I don't know if anyone, like, have you seen Noshka?
No, I haven't. Not yet.
Yeah. It's that movie, like that movie's also an environmental type movie. Like Mononoke has a much clearer ending than that one. Like that one, I mean, it's not like abstract, like Evangelion or anything like that, but like this one pretty much like wraps up like very cleanly. Like Noshka, it's more like it gets very spiritually at the end, which is kind of cool, but it wraps up with a song, and it's different. But yeah, so that's a summary of it. And this is why we need Jeff, because stuff's hard to do, folks.
It's hard, but I think one beautiful thing, just like looking at it from outside dissecting the plot, I think the way he was able to, Miyazaki, that is, like, capture just like the feeling of being in a woods and being in a forest and something like that. Like that, I wouldn't say like the feeling of being in tune with nature necessarily, but just like the quiet, and like where like you don't hear anything other than the wildlife, really, like, and that's it. Like that, I think he caught really well. I think he captured like the level of mysticism that where it's like, I want to know more about this world. I want to know more about what's going on. Got that perfectly. I think it's just such a just visually and aesthetically pleasing movie. Like from top to bottom, when you watch, even when you're watching fucking Ashitaka shoot an arrow at a samurai and lop his head off, it looks like aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
It just looks fucking good. And like, he was doing techniques in that, like it was 3D rendering on some of the stuff, like the demon flesh stuff. So that was 3D. And yeah. I don't think it was something that was really done very commonly, putting 3D rendering on top of a, what do you call it, hand drawing.
Cell animation. There was, yeah. I think, like, it was unusual. I mean, it was starting to be adapted more and more. Like, the first thing I can really remember that happening is the whole cave in Aladdin.
Yeah.
Like, I believe that was the first time, like, I had seen it. And it looks really off-putting now that they did that. But... the way they did it here, I thought was much, much more natural, mm-hmm. I guess as natural as animation can be. But it was animated in a way, like everything conveyed chaos really well with the demon spirits. It was creepy. It was slithery. It was rotting. It was cancerous. Mm-hmm. I thought like it was done in, especially kind of when his arm expanded, went within, and it was done in a way that like really made you feel like, you know, it was an infection, right? Because you always see the movies where like people are cursed, and like especially in like TV shows where it's just like their veins are like
red. You see Tony Stark with the whatever poisoning, and it's going through his veins bit by bit, and you can see that, right? It's something like that. But in this, I think, you know, the outward, I would say,
it's a living thing, but the infection is a living thing. It's a living sickness. And I think that's what, like, via that animation, that like sort of 3D was able to, like, I think it added to like the how dynamic it was, and mm-hmm. it just made it look more creepy and more kind of like its own thing around
it's
the cell animation.
It's out of place from the rest of the movie.
It's a parasite.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it made it out of place, and that's kind of the idea, right? Is that it's supposed to be making you feel uncomfortable and make it seem like it's not something that it's supposed to be there, which it's not. It's there because of this weird battle that's happening in this forest. And I think that's another dynamic I kind of liked from this movie, was just the fact that it turned from, like, when you're watching this, like, nature is good and humanity is bad. Like, it turns from that to you're watching more and you're like, this is a battle for supremacy. Now, instead, because it's the humans fighting versus the boars and the wolves, and like they all want to be on top, and like that's what it turns into instead. And like that's not necessarily, I would say, the reality of things, but I think that's something where we don't necessarily think of it that way, because like we, like you said before, we think of ourselves, we're the dominant species, we're number one, we rule and can do whatever we want to this planet. But like the reality is, like, there could be a tidal wave right now that kills fucking like 2 million people, right? Like, nature can strike back and do any of that shit and dominate us. So I think that there's a little more, I don't want to say it, like maybe a little more gray area, right? Than most environmental theme movies would have.
Yeah. I mean, nature is literally a living thing, and also at the same time, not a living thing, right? It's many different things at once. Like, you know, a tornado is not what I would, probably not a living thing at all, but what I would consider a living thing. Maybe someone wants to make the argument that
it's a kinetic thing. I mean, nature is kinetic.
But obviously, like, you know, plants, animals, and you know, other things affected by, and it's not just like, look, like, global warming's one thing, but when this movie was made, like, you know, global warming was on the horizon, but I don't think it was talked about the same way we talked about it. No. Like, when I was a kid, it was always talked about like there being a hole in the ozone layer.
Yeah.
It was always talked about in a way that, you know, we were, you know, save the whales, and like that's
don't
become
pollute.
A cliche, like, or like, yeah, like endangered animals and pollution, and that, like, if we could clean up the pollution, like, it was talked about in a way that like there was some sort of like healing that the nature could do if we stopped doing certain activities. And I think the conversation shifted around, like, and you know, the decades that have passed since this movie was developed, to be more about like mitigating future calamity via major lifestyle choices, and how us as humans get around to doing that. And so I don't think that this movie doesn't present an answer to that, right? Like, that's obviously a more complicated discussion. But what I do think it does is it kind of presents the intersections of like different people and how they look at the world, and how, like, you know, like, so Boshi, right? Like, one of the big things I thought this movie did really well, that really, I don't think, you know, animated movies, certainly maybe movies in general, weren't doing at the time, is there's compassion for the disabled in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then she's also taking prostitutes who are ostracized by society and giving them a very valuable role as essentially the head of their households in her Iron Town. So she, you know, she was taking people who were cast out and giving them respect and honor, which society outside of Iron Town wasn't being able to provide it to her. But on the flip side, you know, it was at the detriment to the kind of the world immediately around them. So I thought, like, you had that, but then obviously the Ashitaka, who's kind of the neutral, like, you know, wanting to make sure there is a harmony between all parties, then you had San, who is kind of like the vengeful representation of nature on behalf of humans. And then you had Jigo, who is more so just kind of the chaos.
Yeah. That's what I was saying before, like the chaos and neutral good and all that stuff. Like I'm not smart enough to put that together, but you probably are. But because like that is, I think that there's someone that fits in every part of that in this.
Yeah. And so, you know, like that movie, they doesn't have the answer for like what to do around like, you know, what climate change means or how to necessarily go about it. But what I do think it presents is that it's a very human driven solution. And the challenges we face are human challenges in terms of being able to work with one another, being able to understand each other's motivations, being able to work around or work with those motivations. And so like, it's funny because, you know, while there is like message that was obviously very prescient to modern times, it certainly, it took a little bit of a different view of environmentalism and made it a different time than I think the current thinking on the environment and the future of it, but still holds up relatively pretty well, actually very well.
Yeah, I agree. Very well. For me, it's a 97 out of 100. Jeff rated it a 93 out of 100, and the audience rated it a 95 out of 100. I would say significantly buttered. And you know what? Let's do our top five Studio G movies.
I have
my ranking. I don't have your ranking yet, but I do have the audience ranking. So let me pull up the sheet. You can go. Let's do you first.
Okay. I got Porco Rosso coming in at number five. Dark Horse of the Studio G lineup. A movie more and more people are talking about and is doing a very good job of getting recognition is something I never would have watched if it wasn't for the streaming services, because I wouldn't have had access to it. And it's not something I think you think of when you think of a Ghibli movie, but it's certainly... The thing about the movie is I don't know what happens. I couldn't tell you what the plot of Porco Rosso is. There's no point, but it's delightful. But at the same time, it's like his whole monologue in his tent, on his beach tent, about like his past with the young lady, like was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in filmmaking or animated filmmaking, maybe filmmaking in general. It just sounds so pretentious when I say that.
And it's a fucking pig flying around shooting down air pirates in the Adriatic. Like, it makes no sense for this to be part of an anime, but that's Studio G, baby. That's just how they fucking roll. And I love it. Michael Keaton, my plane, damn. So all is exploding.
I need to go to Turin.
I need to go to Milan to get my plane fixed. I
need to get propeller parts for my plane.
So I'll do my next. My next one is Howl's Moving Castle. I like Howl's Moving Castle a lot. I think that the way it's animated, like the two different, I would say, methods or whatever it is they use, that I'm not smart enough to know what it is, are very interesting. I like the, I would say, it's not witches, but I think it is kind of witches. But like the different types of blend, again, of mysticism and more modern culture, like that era or whatever you want to call it, is very cool. I like, again, both the dub and sub voice cast, and especially Christian Bale. And I remember recently I was looking at the timing of it, and so his voice, Christian Bale's in this, when he turns into the monster creature, is very similar to his Batman voice. And this movie came out about the same time as Batman Begins. So they were recording around the same time. So I don't know which came first, chicken or the egg, but very intriguing to think about.
I thought the art, the moving castle itself was one of the more interesting things in just that like, I don't know, it was like steampunk or whatever. I mean, everything with the thing is like, if it has exposed gears and steam coming exactly, out, it's steampunk to me.
It has to be steampunk.
It has to be steampunk. There's steam. There's fucking steam right there. I see the steam. It's steampunk.
Exactly. Even though like it couldn't be, maybe there's nothing flying, maybe there's nothing, whatever. Like it doesn't matter. If I see a cog, if I see
one gear, fucking cog, it's steampunk.
It's steampunk. I'm sorry. It's Gears of War, steampunk game. Everyone has said this.
Just like if I see jeans above your waist, you're rockabilly.
Exactly. Exactly. That's just the way it works. We'll do Jeff's next. And this is just based off of our rankings from movierankings.net, as you know. His is The Secret World of Arrietty, which is an 84. That comes from The Borrowers, right? That's like the Studio G adaptation of it. I liked it. I don't know if you've seen it.
I actually haven't seen that one yet.
It's very interesting. I don't know if you know The Borrowers. It's like a little tiny, like almost not action figure, like, you know, the 6-inch action figures.
Yeah.
They're like a little small, Okay. They're like, it's a 3-inch action figure is what I'm trying to say, basically. It's like a very small people that live inside houses, and they're called borrowers because they go on like these expeditions into the house to borrow stuff, like food and all this crap like that. It's very interesting. And I'd say it's very, I don't know if sweet's the right word, but it is kind of sweet. The story is like the girl borrower meets a human guy who's having like a heart surgery, I think, if I remember correctly. And like they just kind of have like a heart to heart about their respective situations and how they suck. And it's very, I think sweet is the right word to describe it. Jeff gave it an 84. Audience's number 5 is Kiki's Delivery Service, which is, and so for ours, for the audience vote, that is, instead of doing this from movierankings.net, I did this on Google Forms. And so it was just, you have to pick your straight up, your top 3 Studio G movies. 34% of people had Kiki's Delivery Service on their list. And I agree with you, Drew. I love Kiki's Delivery Service.
I think that was one of the ones that got more main, because like, I remember seeing Kiki's Delivery Service in the video store. Mm-hmm. Like that was one of the ones that was translated on pretty early. I mean, obviously, I think one of the bigger ones, one of the 2 pre-Mononoke ones, I think they were the biggest, were the Totoro and the Kiki.
Yeah, for sure. And I think those are the 2 that like lent themselves best to kids. And because when adults or parents saw like, hey, this is animated, it meant automatically in their brain that it's for kids.
I just remember like Kiki's Delivery Service, and it's like, I'm 8 years old, time for me to go like do my journey. And I'm like, what? No.
Yeah, right. I think it, I don't
too
know
young, it too young for that.
I don't know if it was 8 or 13. I forget what, but it was something like that, right? And she's like a witch, and I like that. I like, again, the witch type of stuff when they blend in all that cool, and I want to say like mysticism 1,000 times with this, but that's kind of hard to do with Studio G. But like that shit's cool to me, and I enjoyed it a lot.
What Miyazaki, I think that one was Miyazaki. But
like, Studio G, so
yeah, Studio G. I mean, they there's a lot of like Western. By Western, I mean just, you know, like you think about Porco Rosso, right? Like, I mean, that heavily
takes place in the Adriatic.
Yeah, it takes place in the Adriatic, and you think about like, I think the concept of the witch itself is more
that European. Conventional witch, I think, is more European
than anything. Like riding the broomstick is very European. And then certainly I think there's a lot of influences in it. The God, what's the one that didn't make my list, but the one about the airplane designer?
Oh, as the wind rises. Yeah, the wind rises.
The wind rises. You know, because then the Italian airplane designer comes into it that way. So, I think like, yeah, it's kind of like that bringing in some of that, like, you know, European flavor to it is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and especially since like for Miyazaki especially, it's like not something you grow up with, but something that you can like immerse yourself in a world of, and that's interesting to me. Like that's not something I think I could do very easily. So you're number 4.
Am I number 4? My number 4 is Totoro.
Yep.
I think Totoro is sublime. I think it you know, the way you think back into like kind of, I guess, the way it portrays the illness of the mom, and then it portrays like, you know, the little girl in her first encounter with Totoro. And there's a compassion to the movie that I have a hard time explaining, but it's very meaningful. It's, you know, very sweet movie, and Totoro is obviously very cute, but I think overall, like it does a good job of highlighting the innocence of childhood against a world where, you know, bad things are happening, like the, you know, the mom being ill and whatever, and moving and relocating and just like difficulties, but also like that wonderment at the same time.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'll have My Neighbor Totoro later. My number 4 is Grave of the Fireflies. Grave of the Fireflies is, I think, it's not, I don't know if you can essentially call it, it's obviously a war movie, but like obviously a lot of Studio G movies like take place around, I would say like in the periphery of World War II. For like obvious reasons, most of the creators in Studio G, like they grew up around that time. And that was obviously very impactful in Japan. So I think the movie is,
Read about it.
Haven't heard. No, we don't know what you're talking about, sir. Us here at Studio G never heard of World War II, but they, I think it's very, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's very sad. It's a very, very sad movie. And I think in a beautiful way. And I think you get a very, I would say, beautiful family sister or family story, that is, about a brother and a sister. And I think that's not something, there's not a lot of like Western comps for me in the animated world where you get something like that. And I feel like I'm watching a familial story that I feel like empathy with, even though I never had a sister, and also something that's more like adult themed. And I think it's a gorgeous movie, and I think not enough people have seen it, and I think more people should. And Jeff's number four is the Tale of Princess Kaguya. I never seen that one, but he gave it an 85.
Yeah, that one is gorgeously animated. It's, I mean, it's a different, it's the different style. It's like a, it's watercolor.
Mm-hmm. Let me look it up. Wait, why? I do remember seeing, oh, wait, never mind. No, I did see this. I'm sorry. I was like, when you said watercolor, that I thought for a second, I thought this was My Neighbor, the Yamadas, which I haven't gotten to yet.
Well, it's, I think it also, because this is a Takahata movie, and I think Takahata did the Yamadas as well. So this is like the non-Miyazaki Ghibli movies, and so it's similar to that.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I don't remember a ton about that, but I remember watching it when I was younger. That's another one of the ones I would say, like, around My Neighbor Totoro and Spirited Away that I watched when I was younger. Audience has Howl's Moving Castle, 53% of them had it in their top three, as it's their number four. We just talked about that, so we can go to trivia number three.
My number three is the movie we know and love. It's Nausicaä. And look, it's dated. You can tell by looking at it. It's still very gorgeous, but it does have that 80s high-end animation feel to it. But some of the concepts in that movie, like the airships, I feel like very influential on, I think, a lot of, on. I'm trying to say, like, just a lot of things to come out of anime and video games that, like, came in years after, like the gliders and the way Nausicaä, like, was dressed and the weapons used in that movie. Mm-hmm. And even like the creature design with the gigantic, I think they're sandworms. It's been a while since
I've
seen
it. It's like a Santicky thing, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, again, that was another one where it was like, you know, there's a sickness that kind of swept the earth, like, you know, big environmental message in that one as well. But it's that one is a good one.
Yeah, that one, I feel bad. I didn't include it in the voting form for the audience, only because it's not technically a Studio G movie. It's a Miyazaki movie, but not part of Studio G left. But, and because, like, people would bitch it. They're going to bitch at us regardless. So I was like, fuck it. I didn't say Studio, I didn't say Miyazaki movie ranking. I said Studio G. So they'll bitch at me if I don't do that. So I didn't have it on the list, but that's your number three. My number three is My Neighbor Totoro. I love it for a lot of the same reasons you do, Trill. A lot of the, you know, when you're a kid, like that roving imagination feeling, and I think it's just the music accompanies everything that's happening so wonderfully. I think the characters, not just the sisters, but also like the dad encouraging it in his own way, is very beautiful. Again, everything Studio G takes place way out in nature, and I think the way he's able to capture, I think the relationship between humans and nature is always going to be, it's very special. I think he has a very deep understanding of that. Jeff's number three is My Neighbor Totoro as well. He gave it a 91. We just talked about it. And the audience number three is My Neighbor Totoro. 59% of people had it in their top three. So you're number two.
My number two is Mononoke. We talked
more than enough about it. And it's my number two as well. It's the audience number two. And it's Jeff's number three. You knew every one of these is going to be in the same sort of, we are going to have everything in the same top two, sort of like the same two selections. So your number one, I'm assuming, is Spirited Away. So we could talk more about Spirited Away, because that's your number one. That's my number one. That is the audience's number one. 90% of people had it on their list. Mm-hmm. And it's Jeff's number two. So we could talk more about, I think, that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Spirited Away for, I think it's probably the most acclaimed Ghibli movie. Yeah. Definitely the most acclaimed,
the most Miyazaki. Iconic, at least.
Yeah, I mean, and it there's just so much going on in that movie. It's so layered in a good way, and like from a world building standpoint, it's so interesting. And it's also just like, it's another one of those like growing up movies, right? Like, yeah. he either has a movie about growing up, a movie about the environment, or it's about airplanes. That's pretty much what Miyazaki does. He does it really well. And so I think Spirited Away, just in terms of like kind of the orchestra, in terms of the different parts it brings to the table, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's hard to really describe. I mean, you say like, oh yeah, and the parents turn into pigs. someone hadn't seen it. It was good. It was in a good way. Like, you enjoyed it. It's hard to get into it. But
yeah, he's very straightforward, I think, and then especially with, even like you said, the parents turning into pigs, it's like you know exactly what he's trying to get across, and I think in a lot of Spirited Away, and I think it's very like rich. I don't know how else to put it. Like, a lot of his other movies are maybe a little more like, they're colorful but more muted. I feel like the saturation on everything in this movie is up high, and like, to emphasize, I think, not necessarily the clown show, but like all the spiritual elements of everything happening around in the house, everything happening with the creature, everything happening with the characters. And it's very, I think, not necessarily an easy watch, but again, an easy to understand watch, no matter whether you're Japanese, whether you're Western, whether you're fucking from anywhere, it doesn't matter. You can understand, I think, the base message from Spirited Away. And I think it's just, that's one where, like, I watch Spirited Away and I'm very, like, very easily and confident. I'm like, this is, I don't care who you are. Like, this is a good movie. If you don't think so, you're just wrong. Like, and I'm sorry. Like, this is just a fucking good movie.
Yeah, the huge contingent of people who don't like Spirit.
I guarantee you, there's people that don't like Spirit. It's only 90% of people had it in their top three for Studio G. People, and I think there's other movies that are better that they have.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I'm just saying. I guarantee you.
Give it another chance.
Any fucking opinion in the world, and you go online, you'll find people bitching about it.
Oh, I don't disbelieve you, my friend.
So yours are Spirited Away, Mononoke, Nausicaa, My Neighbor Totoro, Porco Rosso. Mine are Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, Howl's Moving Castle. Jeff's are Mononoke, Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, Tale of Princess Kaguya. Someone's screaming at the car.
Kaguya.
Sure. In the Secret World of Arrietty, and the audience is Spirited Away, Mononoke, Totoro, Howl's Moving Castle, and Kiki's Delivery Service. And now, I think this is what people were more excited for, was us giving our top five anime, and they got to submit, and they had some interesting choices. So,
I'm just going to go down 5-1.
Do
it. List them, and so my five is Rurouni Kenshin. And I got to say, my anime is from like a very narrow time.
Specific time point. Yeah.
Specific time point. So I haven't watched a whole lot since, but these are just my five favorite. One Punch Man, which is outside of that period of time, but it's so funny. Serial Experiments Lane, which came out in like 99, 2000, and very creepy, but very, very profound, I thought. Mm-hmm. Cowboy Bebop, which a lot of people are going to have a number one, because I think it is the... It came out in Adult Swim at the right time in people's lives, but I also think it is an extremely cool show with great music. And of course, my number one is Evangelion. Mm-hmm. Even though that show is kind of a mess at certain times, it does that thing. We were talking about it where, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, a lot of Western religious symbolism and religious discussion. It was kind of like, you know, the different interpretation on it. I enjoyed it.
Very heavy-handed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not subtle, right?
Like, here's
it's not...
Eve's spear to skewer Adam with the trident of God. Okay.
It's also very fucking indulgent, like in itself, like closer to the end. Like, and I get the frustrations with it, but when the show was on a tear, when it kind of, you kind of got into like the beef of it, when everyone started getting miserable, and like the episodes, like, you know, 18 through 24 or whatever. Like it became like very, very interesting.
I love like there's a name for the style for this, but like the drawing of technology in that period where they did like that Gundam and like all those other in movies and stuff, like that shit is so cool. Like mech suit design and whatever you want to call it, like military tech shit design and animate that period is so fucking cool. I still love it so much. I'll do my same thing. I'll do 5-1. My number five is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And that one, it took me a little bit to get into, but once it hits like its fucking roll, it is so good. It's funny. It's entertaining. It keeps you, I think, engaged. And I think considering how the powers switched from being, I don't even remember what it is now, but it was like the power of light or whatever to the power of stands. Like, and it just didn't even fucking skip a beat. Like any other movie or show, I'd be like, what the hell just happened? I think it's just very flawless in many ways. Next is Hunter x Hunter. I think Hunter x Hunter is fucking awesome. It's very, I think, well paced out, because there's a lot of different, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, there's a lot of different powers and levels of things, how like everything escalates and everyone's powers escalate. I think the way that they paced it out throughout the show so far anyway It's very good. I love the characters top to bottom. And it's that's one where you want to binge it and never stop watching it. And my number three is Yu Yu Hakusho. That's one you put me on. True.
Did I? I'd never seen it.
You definitely, I think you told me to watch it, or maybe a random.
I don't think I did, man.
Then a random person probably told me to watch it. But that one, the good old Spirit Detective, that's another one where I just really enjoyed the story of it. I love the characters from top to bottom. It doesn't matter if it's Kurobara, it doesn't matter. Like, all of them are cool. The whole gang, like, they all have their own things. And I enjoy the characterization of all of them. Like, the old 80s, 90s-ish music. I like that era of animation for anime, and I think it holds up really well. It's like, I think 4 seasons, and all of them I enjoyed, especially even at the end when power started going crazy again. Number 2, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. This is, I think, a lot of people have this in the top 5. It's fucking awesome. It's I don't need to pitch you on it. Number 1 for me is Cowboy Bebop. Like you said, Trill, hit at the right time. I only watched, like, I remember a few episodes of it on Adult Swim, but I caught up on Hulu, which is still on. It's cool. It's like, it's fucking space western, man. What's not to like about that? Yeah. Like you said, cool music and cool great characters. Music.
Cool bad guy too. Vicious.
Sweet. Yeah.
You always tell he's a bad guy when his hair's gray.
Exactly.
He's young. That's the mark of the ultimate bad guy.
Exactly. They do that in fucking One Punch Man. The
bad Final guy Fantasy VII. Too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Long sword. Long sword, long hair. Don't care.
Always. The audience top 5 in order. Number 5 is Attack on Titan. I tried Attack on Titan, and I don't really like it that much. It's not because it's scary as so much as, like, I think almost all of my top 5 have an element of humor to it, and Attack on Titan is so dreary and so, like, almost like Evangelion in a sense. It's, like, very dreary and dramatic, and I don't love that in anime. But that's their number 5. Then Naruto. I've never watched Naruto. I don't know about you, Tro.
I've never watched it, man. It was after my time.
Yeah, it's definitely in my period of time, but I never got to it. Their number 3 is cool Full Metal. What's up?
Cool run, though.
Well, cool, yeah, run. Right?
Yeah.
And very sick run. I think cool outfit. Orange is always going to play.
Yep.
Their number 3 is Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Just talked about that before. It's an amazing series. Definitely, I would say, must watch in most people's anime views. Their number 2 is Cowboy Bebop. And their number 1, what would you guess it is?
The Dragon Ball.
No, not Dragon Ball, which I personally think is better. Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, well, that's what I meant, dude.
But okay. So Dragon Ball is only the whatever original, however many episodes, which is a great run. It's very, very good. But they mean Dragon Ball Z, which is everything after, I guess, Raditz shows up on.
That's what I would have guessed if I knew we were being sticklers about specific run of Dragon Ball.
Some people specified Dragon Ball. Some people specified, like, Dragon Ball, like, Super and other stuff. But, like, most people than anything else said Dragon Ball Z. It's very much overwhelmingly the number 1 overall, I think, probably because it's the most name recognition. I think most anime super fans won't say that's, like, hey, that's the number 1, that's the best anime. But, like, that's just, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it's a mainstream anime, though, right? It's easy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, so we're talking about Dune, right, in the group chat, because I picked up the book Dune, and I'm like, really enjoying reading it right now, but it's not that well written. Mm-hmm. It like, just isn't. It's like, the characters don't feel like, and I'm not like halfway through with it yet, but the characters don't feel fleshed out, but there's so much enjoyable shit around it. And it came out at the right time. It was so influential. It got a bunch of people into sci-fi, which created even better sci-fi. I think Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z were like that for a lot of people, both from a creation standpoint and from just getting your toes wet into Japanese animated entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So your top 3, 1 to 5, Evangelion, Cowboy Bebop. Was it Serial Experiments Lane?
Lane. L-A-I-N. Yeah, L-A-I-N.
Oh, okay. Lane. And One Punch Man, then Rurouni Kenshin, right?
Rurouni Kenshin.
Rurouni.
Yeah, if we're being sticklers about Dragon Ball, then.
Well, fine. That's fair. It's fair. My 1 through 5, Cowboy Bebop, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, Yu Yu Hakusho, Hunter x Hunter, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Audience top 5, top to bottom: Dragon Ball Z, Cowboy Bebop, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, Naruto, and Attack on Titan. And now we're gonna have we're going to have our good friends, Coley, Nick, and KV on to do our draft of most disappointing children because we're talking so much about Miyazaki. But before we do that, we're going to talk to you a little bit about CBDMD. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete or a stay-at-home parent or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo of topical products to help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. They have CBD Freeze with menthol now, which is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient, easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover, which combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support of things where you get the support where you need them, where it matters most. And make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer. They're offering all of our listeners 25% off on their next order when they use promo code LIGHTS at checkout. Once again, CBDMD.com, promo code LIGHTS for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Okay, now we're joined by Coley, KB, and Nick for the draft of the most disappointing children. It's just kind of fitting, I think, because we're doing a Miyazaki rating, and he obviously despises his children more than anything on earth. So it just seems like it fits. So how are you guys doing?
Doing well. I've been looking at kids on the internet all day, trying to decide what what child to take. And I'm ready to roll.
That's Kids by MGMT, the band.
Oh, fuck. Do the Chitty Bang remix.
Do Chitty Bang opposite of adults.
Just that with a beat.
What do they say in like the start of it? They're like, it's like fresh
no fighting.
Fresh kids see. Fresh kid pee.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I don't even know what they spell.
So our draft was already predetermined in the randomizer. It's going to be Nick, then myself, then Trill, then Coley, then the audience, then KB, and then we're going to snake our way back. All right, first up, Nick, you have first pick.
Yeah, I'm happy I got first pick because I think this is an obvious one. He was deemed the next Pele. I'm going Freddie Adu.
You motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
As a boy, you know, he peaked very early. He dated JoJo, the singer. He was on a box of Honeycomb, my favorite cereal. And then he just kind of fizzled out, man. I Googled him today expecting him to be like 58 years old. He's 31. He's just obscure.
It's pretty shocking.
Florida. Yeah.
Didn't he get drafted? Wasn't he on the DC team? That was the big
DC
deal.
DC United, yeah.
He got drafted to the DC 14 team.
14 years old, I think. Oh, and so he was supposed to get kids into soccer. I started playing soccer because of him. I quit because I got stung by a bee. But what a disappointment, Mr. Adu.
For my next pick, I'll pick the person that inspired this list, and that would be Gorō Miyazaki. Miyazaki's son. And basically, he was such a bad animator and such a bad animated movie director that the first movie he made, his father walked out of and basically told him, "You suck." And he later had to make Miyazaki, that is, an entire movie to apologize to his son. That's how meanly he treated
really?
Him because he was so disappointed in Ponyo.
He had to make an apology movie?
Ponyo
was an apology movie?
Ponyo was his apology to Gorō Miyazaki, which is incredible. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense when you think about the plot.
I hate when I have to make an apology movie for my kid.
Happens to the best of us.
My first pick, I'm going to take Bobby from Bobby's World. I thought in terms of animated children, Bobby was the worst. He was super annoying. He had that Uncle Ted who was just kind of a big weirdo in the life of the show. And Bobby really brought nothing to it. It always seemed to just complicate matters more with his hijinks.
That's an obscure reference I don't even get. I don't know the show.
You never watched Bobby?
Howie Mandel?
Yeah.
That was Howie?
Yeah.
In sure the was. Early 90s, Howie Mandel and Louis Anderson faced off together with their own animated shows.
We created it? And he voiced it? Holy
yeah. yeah. It's like Fox was just giving out animated shows to stand-up comedians at the time. So Louis Anderson got Life with Louis, and then Howie Mandel got Bobby's World. And I think Howie Mandel won. I don't know. I don't really know.
America won.
Yeah, we got two great shows from the two preeminent 90s, early 90s comedians.
Very good.
Bobby was always zipping around on a tricycle too, which is
a big wheel.
Was it a big wheel?
Yeah.
Yeah. The worst of transportation, in my opinion.
What?
Well, it can't go very fast.
Can't go very fast. It's a non-creative name.
He did it indoors too, which I don't know. Look, I can't co-sign that. It seems unethical.
Hazardous, to say the least.
Yeah. Next up is Coley.
All right.
For real this time, I promise.
There's a lot of terrible kids still left up on the board.
Disappointing. I'm going
with, disappointing, you're right.
Yeah, disappointing.
I don't see much of a difference there, but you're right. Disappointing. I'm going to go with Cooper Manning.
Oh, you just swiped the audience's pick right out from under them.
Really?
Both brothers, multiple Super Bowl championships. He sometimes makes funny videos because of their ability to win Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm. And it's all in reference. That's like his claim to fame now, essentially. It's my dad was good and my brothers are good.
I don't know, dude. I think that would be a great position to be in, though. Like, I would enjoy being the Cooper Manning of the family.
But still disappointing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Great life situation. Oh, he doesn't look too good either.
He had a very bad back problem, if I remember correctly.
Sure did, yeah. He was like a really good receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he had potential.
Right. That was where he fucked up. I would agree with Trill if he wasn't actively trying beforehand.
Arguably the best quarterback name out of the bunch.
Nick, what is up with your head?
I have a headband on.
And what's in the back?
My hair.
Do you have a ponytail on?
Well, I'm home here. I'm kicking it. I don't want my hair in my face.
Oh,
I didn't know your hair was that long. I didn't know you had ponytail length hair.
I would never step out like this.
Turn to the side.
I shaved my head with a razor for the first time. I went full penis man this weekend. Full Scott Van Pelt, penis man.
You look like Prison Mike because I can't see the top of the headband down.
I mean, I don't love it, but it is what it is, right?
I think it very much fits your transition into Moby.
Now all I have to do is lie about dating Natalie Portman.
I'm gonna get the face tattoo that says like veganism is cool or what? What did he get?
It doesn't just say animal rights.
Moby was cool because he just got to a point where you're just selling his songs to anyone. Like the Hyundai would call up Moby and it's like, hey Moby, we need a song for the Tiburon commercial. And Moby is like, we'll just take your pick. It's $15.
I don't give a shit. All right, next up is the audience. And so they pick their actual number one pick is literally just the words either me, myself, or I or something. And like, sure, like I get that. That's fair. But I can't, there's no like that's amalgam of LCB listeners. It's not as fun. So go with their second pick, Caillou.
Oh, yeah, Caillou's awful.
Awful kid. Awful kid.
Yeah, I don't know who. I don't even really remember Caillou's parents though.
They were innocent. They were wholesome, and they were just cursed with a demon child.
Kind of looks like Trill actually right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh yeah, who is Caillou? I don't watch things.
Caillou is a it's a Canadian.
But
it's
wasn't
a Canadian
that like
cartoon.
That was past our cartoon? Yeah. Like, era. Yeah. Okay, but you guys still just consumed it.
No, Caillou became pretty famous because he, I think a lot of like, at least like in 2013, like the prominent sports writers I followed that had kids complained about Caillou. So I looked up the Caillou videos online and they are awful. He's a whiny.
I'm looking at him. Yeah.
He looks like a bitch, to be honest.
Dangerously close to you.
Caillou looks like half the people that would post their outfit on like the Reddit men's fashion advice though.
The hip hop like, heads.
Just like getting a fit off, like fit of the day pick. Like just
yeah, who was like that? Remember the Vine kid with the long blouse and the high shoe?
Vaguely, yeah.
Dressing like a toddler, getting a fit off.
Yeah. Color block outfit being like, yeah, this shit's fire right now. It's really cool, right?
I'm pretty sure Caillou grew up to be Anthony Fantano, that music reviewer.
Or Pitbull.
Either or.
All right, KB, you got back-to-back picks.
Okay. So my first, I'm going with Seth. And you probably don't even know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, you got to be more specific.
But you should, because it's Adam and Eve's third child.
No fucking.
And this is real because I was gonna go with motherfucking Kane, or no, I was gonna go with Abel because he was the first. He was like the first child ever, and he got murdered. That's lame. Then I said, "There's a third child named fucking Seth." Yeah, so, he's a top five human chronologically, but not even like a top 100 Seth.
One of the first five people ever was named Seth.
Seth. Yes. Google it right now. It's insane.
That'd be a great BuzzFeed article. It's like top five humans chronologically.
There's no legacy. Way
if you answered this right. Wow, you must be Methuselah.
Still alive.
Dude, I was shocked when I saw that.
Oh my god. Oh wait, so there's a religion behind him called Sethanism.
Oh man, I might swear to god.
What? Dude,
he gets no playing time in the Old Testament.
What the fuck? Deserves none.
Sethanism?
Is he Robert Barone?
I don't even know. I thought it was a parody article at first, but he's real.
There's a whole article on Sethian texts. Like, there's Bibles written about Sethanism.
Yeah.
This is fucking incredible.
I gotta be careful here because I don't want to inadvertently step on somebody's faith if that's the case.
Step away, please.
Step away. I don't think there's many active Sethanists. All right, you got back to back, Ibby. So you got next. That was a great first pick.
The next one is Robot Chicken.
It's JC Chan, Jackie Chan's only son.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's a terrible dad, Dame. I forgot about that.
He's not even the most successful JCCHA.
I'm going to JC Shazaz.
He's just like a wildly pathetic human who like tried to do. He voiced Master Crane in the Cantonese version of Kung Fu Panda. Jackie hates him. He got a lot of felonies. Yeah, he won people. He was ranked China's top wastrel.
Top wastrel.
It's wasteful, good, wasteful, good for nothing person.
Oh damn.
My god.
I don't hate that award.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah, Jackie was our hero.
We need them. There's no American award for that, like just top scumbag of the country.
He invented that just to like diss him.
The whole award.
This is relationship to Jackie Chan. During an awards ceremony in Beijing in April 2011, Jackie stated he'd be donating half his money to charity when he dies instead of to his son. I'd like to think Jackie got up on stage to specifically make this announcement.
Like he didn't have to say that.
No, he wasn't even accepting an award.
They just private.
They just have to give Jackie Chan stage time because he's Jackie Chan. And so he got up there and was like, I just like to take this time to say my son gets nothing.
He didn't even say, like, you're right. Like, he could have just said, half my fortune is going to charity, but he specified, and not to my son.
At an award ceremony, that's when you only make your strongest opinions.
It's incredible. All right. Next up is the audience, and their next up is the Jordan kids, which was, I know that had to be on everyone's list. I know that was on mine.
I had only Marcus, I didn't have the other one.
I actually don't know much about them.
I don't know anything about them.
I just remembered they would show. I think it was like 2005 when was Marcus the one at Illinois? Was I remember one was
he was the better of the two, which isn't saying much.
So one was at Illinois and it was like a big deal, and Jordan was in attendance, and there was basically a camera on Jordan the whole time, and every time they would cut to Jordan, he just would look unimpressed to be there.
Because Eric Gordon was on the other team giving him like 50.
Yeah, that other team, Indiana University.
Wait, he played for UCF, Marcus.
I think they bounced around.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. All right, Cole, you're up.
This is a recent one that came across my life. I didn't know they were such a disappointment, but Craig Sager, too. The one that went on quite the rant the other night against like all progress in American culture.
Craig Sager Jr. I'll be damned.
This is just the kind of stuff that you mentally, you don't know when you're just not on Twitter and you're thankful for it.
Yeah. You know, it was a wild, the whole Sager family
wireman of Twitter
had quite the falling out in front of everyone.
Oh, that's that, that'd be him.
Great reality show. It just like watching people's Thanksgiving dinner fights. That's happening on Twitter.
All right, Trill, you're up next.
You know what? I'm going to take Baby Huey, the big chicken with the diaper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, Baby Huey is obviously older than diaper age by his size. He should get out of that diaper. And I think just by still being in a diaper and being that big, he's one of the most disappointing children ever.
Oh, got it.
Wearing a baby bonnet. It's okay, so I don't want to say it, but Baby Huey could be 38, and that's just a fetish.
Yeah, at a point, it's a fetish.
I don't know what Hanna-Barbera was thinking.
Oh, this he's making like this face in every picture I'm looking at him right now. We're just like, oh, did I do that?
Like, made him stinky gross. And dipey. I've never liked Baby Huey. It's a very off-putting character.
Very
smart. All right, I'm up next. I got back. I don't have backpack. Nick's after me. I have to like scroll because my Excel sheet is too big, and I just keep fucking up the order. But anyway. My number two pick is the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because I saw it on Twitter today. And the first thing I thought is like, well, disappointing child of George and Evelyn DiCaprio.
Oh, God, dude.
In fact, disappointing child.
Right. Get it, man. Right. Get it. It's solidified for me. I don't mind it. I think you took a chance, and I appreciate that.
No, you did take a chance, a bad one.
But paid off, didn't it?
It did.
All right, Nick, you're up.
I don't know how I'm going to follow that other than saying any other name. I'm going with the baby angel emoji because it's only used in bios when a child dies.
That's
and
true.
You see that emoji, and it's just, man. And well, you see, it says the initials, and then it says like 2011 to 2011, and then it's that emoji following it. That is a disappointing child.
Mm-hmm. And I understand like people handle their grief in different ways, but it's disappointing from the standpoint that even if you're scrolling through your emojis, it's basically the baby shoes never worn of the emojis.
And so
if you're scrolling through the emojis trying to get to the food section and you see the angel baby, like in your mind, you're like, oh,
yes. And I mean, the saddest story in five words, I could do it in one emoji.
Baby yes. Angel emoji never used.
Dude, I'm trying to think of, I can't think of one other alternative way to use that.
It is made for dead kids.
It's mm-hmm. probably the most loaded emoji.
Oh yeah, there's no other way to read it. You can't read the it's like Winnie the Pooh who when he dies in the GIF. It's like you can't read that in any other way other than Winnie the Pooh died.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
presumably that's it.
All right, Nick, you got back to back.
I'm taking Jean Baptiste. You may be wondering who that is. That is the baby on the Sacagawea Golden Dollar. Sacagawea's child. He managed to con his way onto currency, but what did he ever do? He has a whole Wikipedia page of nothing. He died. I thought he
legal trouble.
Died young. He has an all-time origin story. Yet he died at 61, which is like 2,000 years old in today's time, and he didn't do anything with it. He's just Jean Baptiste. His claim to fame is that he was attached to Sacagawea.
He was, in fact, had by Sacagawea. Mm-hmm. Is there anything worse? I hate those dollars.
Her baby?
I like
her
him.
Kid?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, just like he wasted such a good origin story.
He was, as a baby, went on the Lewis and Clark expedition, which is like one of the coolest things ever, and then it just became a scrub.
It's like the historical version of the baby on the Nirvana album cover.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I'm sure that kid did fine, but like anybody who was like Gen X was like, you were so famous at a young age, and this is what you've done with your life? You were on the Nirvana album cover, and you didn't even start your own band called Nirvana 2.
He probably the kid that was on the Nirvana album cover posts like him jumping into pools like every other week, just like it's been 16 years and 8 months since Nevermind came out, just like clinging on to it.
Yeah, yeah. He does like a throwback Thursdays and flashback Fridays back to back.
he's just like one of those like D-level celebrities that post shitty paintings people have done of him.
But what is his name?
Those are so sad.
Got this one. Thank you so much, Randy Painter Man
from 84. Love it. Love this expressionist painting of me.
Do you think he was pissed when his dick started growing? So because like it was less recognizable.
Mm-hmm. he pulls out his dick now, and he's like, "Yeah, recognize this." I'm like, no.
He's in line for the club. So we're not gonna let you in. He's like, "Do you know who I am?" No.
Look at this.
One word. Never mind. What? Well, let me show you my dick. No, no, it's okay.
Let me show you my tiny dick really quick. I swear. All right. I'm up next, and I'm going to pick Canadian singer Bryan Adams. His child, specifically Alex Adams, a male porn star that exclusively does incest porn for websites Family Therapy XXX. And Mommy Comes First.
Hold on. I have to disagree with you on this one, Ken Jack.
I'm sex positive, so I don't think that's disappointing at all.
I just gotta say, I think I don't think Bryan Adams wanted his son to grow up into that industry, but it's totally fine to run into
that. Can we pause the pod to do like a class wide watch along? What is it? Alex Adams?
Alex Adams, the porn star? Yeah.
So he didn't even change his name.
No.
I did my first real sex scene.
Well, yeah, it's partially his fault for fucking making the summer of 69.
Yeah.
Okay. He destined his own son for failure.
He's not even the top Alex Adams on Pornhub.
Really?
That's disappointing.
He's everywhere. Or maybe that's just my recommended history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Trill is up next.
Okay. You know what? I like what's available for me.
Yeah. A lot of kids.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Theodore from the Chipmunks.
He stinks.
He does stink. You know, like Alvin's the cool one, and then Simon's the brainy one, and then Theodore's just the fat.
They all got brainy.
Fat one. Yeah, he's the fat
one. He's the dumb. He's just dumb and fat. And he's like maybe four of the characters in the movie Seven combined into one chipmunk that get killed.
Isn't he voiced by Zac Efron though?
In the remake, maybe. I don't remember. I just remember the animated series. I think he was even dumber in the animated series.
Sure, I'm going to tell you right now that when I make the graphic for this, it's going to be the picture of him getting fucking domed by the girl chipmunk.
That's where all of our minds immediately went.
all five of us thought of the chipmunks getting brain.
We're all, yeah.
How do you bring up that subject though without seeming creepy? That's the dilemma when discussing the chipmunks.
Dude, now it's all I can think of. That thing is stained for life.
You guys getting head. You guys have perhaps the most online podcast in the game. Like anyone listening to this whose mind didn't go to that probably shouldn't be listening to this.
No, yeah.
I think
99% of the listeners.
I was on Instagram the other day and like one of those big content aggregator accounts posted one of like just them engulfed in flames. It was like which chipmunk's suffering the most in hell. And it worked just as well.
It was Simon.
Because Alvin would be like, I'm gonna skip school, and Simon would be like, Neil, you need to go to school, and then Theodore would just be like, I want to eat some pie, Dave.
I think that was a great pick.
Were the Chipmunks Keeper also called Dave, much like Garfield?
No, John.
John Arbuckle. You
John
fucking
Arbuckle.
Idiot.
Wow, that's embarrassing for me.
No, Dave.
We were
Seville.
Just talking about John.
We were.
That's
Dave
a tough look for
Dave
you.
Seville. Yeah.
So he is the most inconsequential comic celeb, though.
More
than Dilbert?
Dave, the Garfield's dad.
John.
Exactly.
John Arbuckle's just a sad man, which as you get older, it's very relatable. But as a kid, you immediately identify John Arbuckle as somebody you don't want to be.
Did you tell them about your 2K golf character?
Oh, John Parbuckle?
Yeah. his character in 2K is John Parbuckle, and then Jeff's is Golf Field Lasagna.
Well, so originally I was going to make my character Jared Fogolf, but I didn't want people to get the wrong idea.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
All right, Coley, you're up.
Well, we're in the second round. Honestly surprised this pick's still up on the board. What?
We're in the third round now. We're snaking.
Oh, I forgot I got two picks.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm even more shocked this is still on the board. I'm going with artist.
Who could that be?
You talk about disappointment. If that guy could just fucking paint, boy, oh boy, would we all be in a better place right now.
How pissed off do you think his parents were? They sent him all the way to art school in fucking Bavaria or whatever.
That's like, probably why things unfolded the way they did. Like, they gave him a beating you wouldn't remember.
Look at my pointillism, Papa. Never come home.
This is cubism, you fucking idiots.
Every parent that sends their kids to art school has to have that thought in the back of their head. Like, is it worth it?
Yeah, I guess this kid hasn't been able to be in the lines his entire life. This is quite the risk.
Which you have to go all in. You have to make sure you give them everything they need to succeed or don't send them at all.
Yeah, but art school's tough because I think it would be cool to go to art school. Like, I generally think getting an education on something in the arts would be like enriching and all that shit, and it enable you to follow your passions. Unfortunately, it would just be tough to, like, you know, pay the bills.
Yeah,
which I guess, you know, that's what we're talking about.
It's a dilemma he faced.
Back to, for the audience, after picking Jordan's kids, they're now going to take both of Tom Hanks's adult sons, Chet Hanks and Colin Hanks, the actor.
No, I have no problem with Colin. I feel like Colin has blazed his own trail. But Chet Hayes?
I'm going to play the clip here.
Big up the youth, them way out of Kingston. Me wake up this morning and me see the thing turn up. Internet gone mad. Respect, you don't know.
He has his degree from Northwestern University and speaks like surprising. That.
Yeah, because he probably went to their journalism school, and they're like, okay, like, your only option for having a career right now is to go, like, fucking just have 3,000 followers on Twitter and have a blue check mark and fucking retweet everything, or you could be a fail son rapper and make millions of dollars. And he's like, I'll do that.
Well, he's literally Ross Trent from the SNL skit.
Yeah.
KB, you're up.
All right. Third is King Tut, who ruined the lineage of Egypt. He was only 8 or 9. He had a club foot. Feminine hips. He couldn't walk. He had the motor skills of a Venus flytrap. He was the Genghis Khan of craniofacial anomalies. And he had a flat head. It was shaped like Missouri. And to be honest, there was a Tut mania in like the 70s. Or he just got a lot of undeserved pop culture references.
The Steve Martin song?
I'm
surprised you took him and not that Habsburg heir that they called. His name was like Charles the Ugly, and like he was the last of the inbred Habsburg Empire. He inbred him literally out of existence. Like, he was the ugliest person in the world.
Oh, Charles II of Spain?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Charles the Bewitched.
Oh, I thought it was the ugly. But the pictures of him, like, even the paintings of him are ugly, and, like, they're paying those people to make them look good. and they still made him look ugly. That's how you know he was 10 times worse than that.
I'm gonna look.
He's getting that fit off in that painting I'm looking at, though.
It is nice. You got back to back,
Kyle. Kyle, you defended. I mean, you said Seth isn't in the top 100 of famous Seths. King Tut is probably the most famous Tut.
He is. He's disappointing in the fact when you like realize who he actually was, like a mal-shapen little boy version.
See, and that's disappointing because I clearly remember in the Peabody and Mr. Sherman or Mr. Peabody and Sherman movie or whatever it was, they go back in time and meet a King Tut who is pretty normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wasn't. He was a disgrace.
Disgrace. Then Egyptians also famous inbreeders.
He was a disgusting little boy.
You got back to back, KB.
Okay. The little boy bear from the Charmin commercials who does the My High Clean jingle. He's wearing underwear despite being a fur-ridden bear, and it's just my least favorite commercial jingle ever.
The way you say Charmin is hypnotic to me. Charmin.
Charmin.
I have a Persian twang.
Charmin.
Charmin.
He always has little roaches in his butt, doesn't he? Some toilet paper roaches. Yeah.
He has like dingleberries from that. It looks like shaving cuts in his asshole, but it's just little bits of toilet paper. I don't think I've ever had toilet paper get caught up in my butthole. Ever. I don't think that was a Charmin thing. Nor maybe I have a smooth butthole.
Yeah, you must have a
lubed up butt.
That's very wet butt. Different thing.
Yeah, maybe. The audience next pick was, I think both of these had the same votes, but I'll just pick AJ Soprano for them, which is a great pick. Nobody likes AJ Soprano. Like, he serves his purpose to be hateable, but I don't think anybody enjoyed AJ Soprano when watching The Sopranos.
Yeah, but he's disappointing as, like, in context of the show, but yeah. his character is essential to kind of like contrast the Tony's disappointment with his lifestyle and basically his son growing up with the affluence that is afforded him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's purposeful, but definitely Tony hated his fucking guts. Cole, you're up.
I mean, a lot of really good picks left up on the board, but give me Jackson Mahomes.
we all wanted him.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Again, great fourth round value. Shocked he's still there. To pair him with young Hitler is a dream for this franchise.
Yeah.
Imagine the TikToks.
What's wrong with
one's artistic vision?
what's wrong? I don't know much about Jackson Mahomes. Like, what's...
He's just a TikToker, and his brother's a fucking Super Bowl MVP and MVP and best football player alive.
He's also the size of an MVP quarterback.
Yeah,
that, he's like tall. He's way taller than Patrick Mahomes, and I believe got like D1 basketball offers, and was like, "Nah, I'm just TikToking."
I respect that.
He did not get D1 basketball.
Going back to the Cooper Manning discussion, that is, if he wasn't good at sports, like I respect, like firmly slotting myself as the fail son who just rides the wave, baby.
Yeah.
Again, I respect that if I could change lives, but if you were the parent, which is how I'm looking at this, you cannot be pumped about that.
I think as a parent, you just have to cut your losses. Just be like, all right, we 50% hit. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And most
incredible
people don't even get
50%
that.
Too.
Yeah. Greatest football player alive and a TikToker. Actually, they kind of got that with the Greers, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You got Nash Greer, the football player, and then Will Greer. Or reverse.
Will
that.
Is the
you
football
know what I
meant. No. They have Hayes as well, which who is past Nash.
Yeah, he's just ramping dirt bikes.
Oh, I mean, that's even better.
Cool.
They're 2 for 3.
Pretty cool.
All right, Trill, you're up.
All right, I'm going to take your friend who didn't have an N64. Shit, that shit sucked. You're going over sleepover.
So
you're like, you have your GoldenEye cartridge with you, and your friend's just like, well, we don't. Or I'm sorry, maybe not didn't have an N64. It was Let me rephrase it. It was your friend who had an N64, but had his N64 taken away from him for a period of time due to bad behavior, but didn't tell you before the sleepover. Yeah. So you couldn't bring over your own N64.
There was an air of hope in the
which has actually happened to me. Very disappointing.
Yeah, this was sleepover. Super personal.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember it. It taught me I always need to have an N64 in my bag. I keep an N64 in my emergency, like right next to my spare tire in my car.
Wait, well, there are some kids who only had like terrible games though.
Yeah.
Like
you know, like no offense to Banjo Kazooie, but like I didn't want to play that. I wanted to play fucking Gold. No, again, yeah. Coley, no offense to Banjo.
Okay. No, I'm taking so we got Mortal that. Kombat Banjo 3 the... Ultimate, Killer Instinct. Oh fuck.
I have Tony Hawk and Goldeneye. My friend says to come over. He doesn't tell me to bring them, and then he just has Glover. I'm gonna fucking flip.
Oh, Resident God, Evil really. 2. The only game he has is Resident Evil 2, and that's the worst sleepover game.
Oh. Get Set Radio Future.
All right. It's my pick, and I'm going to pick Judge Reinhold, because I think if you name your kid a certain profession, like you want them to do that, I would assume. And for him, like his parents had that career path in mind for him, and instead he was in like the star of Beverly Hills Cop 2. And that's gotta suck. You expect them to be a high profile judge, and instead that's their best credit on their IMDb. That's
dead. His name is Judge?
Yeah, Judge Reinhold.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's rough. That's rough.
Judge. All right, Nick, you're up.
So I have two in a row, right?
Yes. It's your last two.
I want to take Aiden Goslin. He was the spectacle boy from John and Kate Plus 8. He was always everybody's favorite. He was a rascal. And ever since the show got canceled, I think he's the only one to be living with John. He doesn't talk to Kate. And he hasn't really done much. I was expecting him to be in some sort of controversy, maybe star in some roles. He had superstar potential. And
Dude, how old is Aiden?
He's 16 now.
Yeah, that's old enough.
Yeah, and he squandered it away.
Mm-hmm. Should be at least TikToking or something. His dad does DJ sets at Chili's now in Pennsylvania, in Allentown area.
Yeah, what's his DJ name? I forget.
I don't know. I'll look it up. What's your next pick?
I'm going to go with every ultrasound photo. They all look the same, and people post them looking for compliments. Like there was that one that went viral. It was a picture of an ultrasound, and the first comment was, "That lasagna looks crisp."
good comment.
The best taken down, the best takedown of ultrasound photos and what people do with them is in the song "Incredible Thoughts" on the pop star soundtrack. When he says, "or a picture of an ultrasound with a Santa hat drawn on."
It's always funny that there's an arrow pointing to the penis. If it's a boy, so I might start doing that in my own photos.
like the Nirvana guy.
Much like the Nirvana boy. But yeah,
the doctor says he's like 90th percentile in the penis department from the ultrasound.
I've seen stuff like that. Didn't a rapper post a picture of an ultrasound, but he just Googled ultrasound because he didn't have his copy of his? But no, they all look the same, so it doesn't fucking matter.
Wouldn't surprise me one bit. At all.
Yeah. So all like what are you expecting when you get your ultras? Like, oh, okay, it looks like all the other ones.
Yeah, boy, Coley and Tro, what did you think when you saw yours?
I think when people post them, it's like more relief, like that everything's going relatively well during that stage of the pregnancy. But a lot of people use them to, you know, here's the thing is like, I understand people's excitement because I've been there, but like when you're in the moment, you don't understand that nobody else gives a shit that you're having a kid. Or any of your kid-related things. Like
I'm shocked an influencer hasn't gotten in hot water for like face-tuning their ultrasound photo that they took. It's like, damn, that's a smooth-ass child.
Well, are we talking about like the 3D ultrasounds though? Right, the alien ones.
Yeah.
Well, the worst are like almost the commenters on Facebook are like, "Oh, he's gonna be a heartbreaker." Or like a football star, like when a football coach posts, like no.
My next pick, I'm gonna pick Oedipus, and for obvious reasons. I mean, if you kill your dad and you cream pie your mom, you gotta be a disappointment to your family and your genealogy and to everyone around you, as he rightfully was.
I think mom disagrees a little bit when you said that.
What'd you say?
And just the combination of words you just said just kind of like made me like have that bad feeling in the back of my throat.
Cream pie your mom is tough.
I don't like it.
We talk about that all the time with what's the Dad Boat movie where Matthew McConaughey is actually like a video game character and it's his son playing as his dad fucking his mom.
Yeah, but the phrase you use, the confectionery. Yeah.
What, he dug out his mom? What's the big deal?
That's better though. I just
look. That's what I'm saying.
Beating Mama Puss's cheeks. Oh.
There it is.
He ate his mom's gruel. What's the big deal?
Coley, who was Boston Cream Pie? What? Who was that a nickname for? Boston Cream Pie.
I don't know.
Trombone Cream Pie.
You said
Cream Pie. That was it. Yeah. That was the Juggalo, right?
Yeah.
High symbol, not.
All right, Trill, you're up next.
All right, let's see, last pick. I'm gonna have to go with like any kids who are big fans of the Van Warped Tour. I don't think they're in a good place in their teenage years.
That's 100% true. I never did it though.
Died there and like got serious injuries.
Well, I think a lot of people were dehydrated, and then they started. Have you read about the Monster Tour water?
Wait, what?
Look it up. I think it was the Warped Tour. Monster Energy Drink put water into their Monster cans and called it Tour water, so that way like the onstage talent could drink the Monster, and it looked like they were drinking Monster. Oh, one making you know all the 17-year-olds in the crowd want to go get Monster on top of the already, you know, overworked hearts they had going due to the heat and the alcohol they were on. It's Monster Tour water, and I think people are trying to collect them.
Yeah,
imagine dying in a pair of Osiris shoes, high tops.
Yeah, yep, the tongue is just so big, it goes up to your kneecap. It's like yellow and orange and green. It's the most offensive blend.
And a pocket. And it's a pocket.
Yeah. Just laying lifeless in the supine position with those dumbass shoes. No one can see that.
Or just like you're just standing in the crowd and Rodney Mullen wipes out in the vert and his skateboard decapitates you.
All you see is the head roll one way and the cookie monster flat brim roll the other way.
The paramedics check your wrist to see if you had any medical conditions. You wear that bracelet and just says, "I heart boobies." That was the one.
Like a bull Bam Margera got enraged at my Elmo hat and furiously attacked me like...
Oh, yeah. No.
Okay. They can't recognize the body. They can just he had a stick and poke heartogram tattoo. And that doesn't really narrow it down. Look,
we don't know much about him. This guy loved UFC. Everything's tap out.
I just want to be an 80-year-old man. Like, you know, like I'm too old for the Warped Tour. Let's say I was like 15 when the Warped Tour is big. It was just getting started out when I was a teen, but it wasn't like the modern Warped Tour. But like, what if you're 15 and the Warped Tour came out and you're 80 and you're just telling stories that you're like, you know, back in my day, I gave Rob Dyrdek the idea for the Fantasy Factory.
Oh my God. All right, Coley, your last pick.
I'm going to go with, George Foreman. Any of them.
I forgot pick about
one.
That.
One of them, I guarantee, stinks.
Well, were the girl ones named Georgina, or am I getting that wrong?
Or is I'm it just pretty George? Sure they're all George.
I feel so bad for them. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
They've got that grill money coming in for the rest of time. I'm sure there's George Foreman air fryer by now. They're fine, but I'm sure one of them still stinks more than the rest of them.
He had to make more money from the grill than he did boxing, right?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
He was boxing for sandwiches when he first started.
It's because I don't even think I've seen him in a fight, even on YouTube, which is pretty bad. I'm gonna have to watch him eventually.
He had a good husky physique. That's why I was liked about him as a boxer.
What's the tweet? And Cole, you'll notice that he did where he's like, you know, everyone's got to go out and live their life because not everyone can live because your friends are dying or something like that. That was him, right?
I don't remember any George Foreman.
It's him like sitting there like hey, and it's like I don't remember the phrasing exactly, but it was something like that. It's like just because your friends are dead doesn't mean you can't live.
What if you signed up for Twitter and that was one of the first accounts they recommended you follow? It's like follow these accounts, George Foreman.
He made $250 million off the grill.
Oh yeah,
like him personally.
And he's not giving any of that to the Georges either.
Probably not. No.
The funny part about that grill is there's nothing revolutionary about it.
Panini press. I don't really understand.
It was a press that squeezed out all the delicious parts.
Yeah, it was on an angle. Beef.
Like, it was on an angle, and it squeezed out all the fat and good stuff from your burger. It stinks.
I know. I think it would have been a revolutionary product if it would have found some way to burn the oil off, and you didn't have to have that little oil tray that you had to drink.
Right.
Mom made you drink. True. That.
Okay. Yeah. Don't drink that.
Wait. You guys didn't have to drink that.
Yeah, it's like when mom makes a cake and you get to lick the spoons. When she's making burgers, you get to drink the oil tray.
Do you want my George Foreman juice?
George Foreman juice.
Georgie juice, yeah.
Monster George. Energy drink, George Foreman juice.
Oh, no. all right. Audience, last pick. They're going with Jeb Bush. And this is steal.
What a steal.
That's a steal. It's an absolute steal.
I actually had him as my fit.
Go with the Kennedy that just lost in Massachusetts.
Yeah. I don't even know what his name is. The redhead one. He stinks.
Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy III.
Yeah. Yeah, that with his wet mouth and pale lips. I hate that guy.
He looks like he's been Go ahead.
I was just saying he looks like he's been doused in like Vaseline constantly. You can't even douse someone in Vaseline. It's solid at first.
I think it's like if someone was trying to like draw a teenage Conan O'Brien from memory.
Dousing in Vaseline is like trying to dump Vaseline on somebody. Like they sponsor the Kids' Choice Awards, replace the slime.
Hold on, it's stuck.
You know, the funny part about like, I feel like Jeb Bush was supposed to be the kid who became president. Like I know he's like a little bit younger than W, but he's
smarter
like,
though.
Yeah, it seems like the straight laced one that was supposed to be president. Like W is out there having a good time or whatever. And it just like is that charisma that got W like to where it was, and then Jeb just like had to follow it up, but he doesn't have that like gear, gear, and that's why I think Jeb's relatable in that way.
I do like it when people use their initials as their first name. It's much like Bam Margera.
But that's not his initials, is it?
Yeah, his
first name's Josh. Bam is it's Barack Amadeus Margera. That's
that's right. It's Barack. Barack Margera.
Tell me that wouldn't have shocked you.
Barry Margs is Pascal.
We've given Don Vito plenty of time to pay his rent. And I just want to say, kick him out of the house.
All right, KB, you're rounding out the draft. Your last pick.
I was going to go with Jeb Bush.
Do you want some of the audience picks that got left off the board?
No, I'll go with Randy Bilzerian.
What? Damn. What? There's another Bilzerian?
There's another Bilzerian.
I feel like you could take both here and get them.
Randy?
Both of them.
It's ironic that the world's horniest man isn't named Randy. It's his brother.
It's Dan's 9-year-old son, Randy.
Oh,
Bilzerian.
No!
He has a son?
Yes. He's just a disgrace to Dan. He has less Instagram followers than Funyuns. He got adopted by a family in Saskatoon, Canada. Yeah, he was conceived at... He was conceived at a rooftop party he was conceived at Betsy DeVos's 50th yacht party.
50th yacht she acquired, not her birthday.
Yes. I'm trying to
I just Googled
give this
it.
Guy more of a bio.
Yeah, this isn't real.
I 100% believed you at the entire time.
Well, yeah,
Randy.
Well, I'm going to Photoshop this.
Randy's only had two heart attacks by the time he turned 18.
Dan fucking hates him.
Grew an intolerance to steroids at age 8. Disowned him immediately.
Randy sent him like the squirt gun emoji once, and yeah, in a perfect world, Randy Bilzerian exists as Dan's son that he no longer talks to.
He's never had to unload escorts from his private plane because the plane is too heavy to take off.
I'm gonna have to Photoshop this now too. I'm gonna have to make
please make him look as whack and as virginish as possible.
Oh, okay. So I'm gonna make him really skinny,
like a child that's never fucked.
Okay, he's gonna have a monogrammed Swiss Instruments backpack for sure. Swiss Army backpack.
He should be Dan Bilzerian's 32-year-old son.
Yeah, that's actually make him.
Oh,
really
the large adult sons would have been a great pick in this.
Ken track. Jack, never mind. Make him really old.
Yeah, I'll make him like close to his age because Dan Bilzerian fucked when he was also 9 years old. Okay, so I'm just going to wrap up our picks before we sign off. Nick, you got Freddie Adu. You got the baby angel emoji. You got John Baptiste Sacagawea's dollar baby. And you got the spectacle boy from John and Kate Plus 8. And and you have all ultrasound picks. I have Goro Miyazaki. I have Leo Poynting. I have Alex Adams, Judge Reinhold, and Oedipus. Trill has Bobby from Bobby's World, Baby Huey, Theodore from the Chipmunks, your friend from with the Nintendo 64 that doesn't have it, and Van Warped Tour Kids. Coley, you have Cooper Manning, Craig Sager Jr., Artist Jackson Mahomes, and George Foreman. Audience had Caillou, Michael Jordan's kids, Tom Hanks' kids, AJ Soprano, and Jeb Bush. KB, you have Seth God. That's what I wrote in there. I didn't know because they have a last name.
Last name was God.
What's his last name?
I don't know.
Jason Man.
He's literally Seth the First.
Exactly.
Are you Chan. God?
Your name be Seth. JC Chan, King Tut, the little bear from Charmin, and Randy Bilzerian.
Randy!
It's Randy!
All right, Randy!
Thanks for joining us, guys. That was actually really fun. All right, I think that's it from us today. We'll be back to your regular scheduled programming later this week with Jeff. And I'm Ken Jack. This is Trill.